Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, lower your expectations, please. Lower your expectations, lower your expectations, lower your expectations. So we're going to be talking about how to lower our expectations. This was a conversation that we initially started yesterday, and we are looking at the, we're looking at the avenues in our lives where we have so many expectations, and when these expectations are not met, right, we are, we're having a hard time, friend. We're having a hard time because, whoa, I mean, it was supposed to be like that. It was not meant to be like that. It was supposed to be like that. It's not meant to be like that. And then here we are, we're stuck between crossroads of what was supposed to be according to us and what was not supposed to be according to us. But what is happening is not what we expected. And I'm trying to get to the root cause of why we expect so much, or why we are not trying to lower our expectations, and maybe related to all the different spaces within our lives. You understand? So I'm saying that if we had a lower expectation rate, if we expected things less, like if we had lower expectations, right? When disappointment comes knocking at our doors, we are not surprised. We are not caught off guard. We are not swept up under our feet. We are not in limbo simply because, or we are not even in limbo. We are panicking. We are not going to be panicking because we didn't expect so much. Now, many of us, our expectations don't seem as if they are too high, because it is our birthright. It is what we deserve. We deserve to be happy. We deserve to be loved. We deserve to make money. We deserve to live in abundance. That is our birthright. The minute that we came onto this earth, that was our birthright. Our birthright is to have a good life. Our birthright is to be happy. Our birthright, friends, is for us to keep to keep this planet Earth safe and for us to be safe in it. It is not part of our cards to go through tragedy. It's not part of our cards to go through bad things. It's not part of our cards to be traumatized, to be victimized, to be blamed, to be disappointed, to be depressed, to be anxious, to be having panic attacks. It's not our birthright, right? And that is why we expect so much from life. Because if we are living good lives, if we are going above and beyond in our regular lives, then it is expected that I must make money. It's expected I must be somebody's parent. It is expected that I must be a caretaker. It is expected that somebody must take care of me. I mean, come on. That is what life is, right? We expect these things, and we expect to stay in our jobs. We expect to have more money in our jobs. We expect to flourish in everything that we touch, because those are things that we are supposed to be doing. And I think it seems a little bit unfair when we look at others that are doing it, and they are going, and they are flying off, and you've never even left the continent, let alone your village, let alone your town. You've never been anywhere, but people on a daily basis are moving in and out of this country like it ain't nothing. People are flying to places like it ain't nothing to pay that chunk of money to be on an airplane, you know? And it leaves you wondering, Kujana, what am I doing wrong? And why am I not afforded or awarded these beautiful opportunities that other people are? And we are saying that comparison, that is exactly how you kill yourself, right? Your dreams, you slaughter yourself from the inside, my friend, by comparing yourself to others, because, we only show the pieces of ourselves that are beautiful. We always only show the best versions of ourselves. Imagine if we went to interviews, right? And we were asked, not even asked, but we were in the mode of not showing our best. We go to the interview. One, we didn't bath. Let's just start there. We didn't bath. Two, we didn't put effort in our outfit, because I mean, it's only an interview that's going to give me a job, that's going to help me sustain myself, right? It's only that. And three, we didn't even brush our teeth. So we've got gunk all over our teeth. You know that, like, oimbobo. Yeah, shanate, wako maewa. You know, it's deep. And when the interviewers start asking us questions, we're like, yeah, you know, whatever, man. Like, ah, you know, and imagine if we could show that bad attitude during interviews. Do you think that, we would actually get the job? Of course not. All of us go there and we smile, my dear. We smile. We smile from left to right, from up to down. We are smiling full force. We are shaking hands. We are grateful. We are displaying attitudes of gratitude. We are displaying being fortunate. You know, we are fortunate enough to be shortlisted. We are displaying our best character traits. And even when we answer questions, we answer it from critical thinking and also from a good state. But that is why we are saying that we are all showing up as our best, and we often ignore our worst, right? Imagine if you guys were on a blind date, your friend is tired of you being lonely and being single, and then she decides that, you know what, I'm going to hook you up with somebody. Then you get there, right? You are excited because you want love. You want to be with somebody. You want a family. You want to get married. You want babies. You want money. You want a support system. Eh? You want somebody to come home to. You want somebody to travel the world with. You want somebody that understands you. You want somebody to love your mother like it's their own mother. You want to love somebody's mother like they are your own mother. Eh? That's what you want, dad. Eh? You want all of this. And then you get there. One, udate yako did not dress the part at all. She looks like she just came out of the Kramadulas or something, right? She just looks like she's not well put together. One eyelash is falling off. She's drinking maroti tire, and that is most not what you are expecting. You are expecting that even if you are this ruggedy person on the edge and you are rough on the outside, at least you will try, right? But imagine if we could all come together and then we are all just showing our bad traits, then nobody would really fraternize with anybody, because we have expectations of what human behavior should look like. We have expectations of what people in our lives should be doing and how you should conduct yourself. Imagine Shitenya comes over. Eh? You are kundarin Shitenya. Shitenya is wearing a full-blown Neitunga. Eh? And it's not that kind of Neitunga where we can complain because it's just a skirt. It's a Neitunga, my dear. Is that one of, she cannot afford to bend, okay? She can't afford to bend. And also, I don't know what type of underwear she's wearing, because it's cutting through everything, and now it's just like, it just drowns. It drowns in the system in up there. It just drowns. You don't even know that she's wearing nothing. And there are things called thongs and G-strings and stuff. So that's what she's wearing. Are you going to still encourage your son to go for Shitenya? Are you still going to encourage your son to marry Shitenya if Shitenya is wearing that? Eh? Shitenya comes with two besties. Uchanga. Because there are three, they are not an even number. When you're going to Utenya, darlings, you guys must be even numbers, ne? It doesn't matter on the gender, but it matters on the numbers. If you guys are going to be two, then it's just two. If it's going to be four, then it's just four. If it's going to be six, then it's just six. Just don't go further than six, guys, because how? Is the wedding today already? So Shitenya comes with two besties, ne? And the other bestie is talking about, yeah, my dear. Oh, okwaninge abortion at dihapo, mara hopefully. How? Are you still going to encourage your son? No, because unfortunately, this is not what you expected. You didn't expect that. She might be the nicest person in the world, but she's already displaying traits of self-disrespect, right? And you assume that she has no dignity and no morals. And she might be the nicest person. That's why your son wants to marry her, because she is amazing. She's a good person. She's a good girl. Mara, the way she presents herself is not okay. And this is what I keep telling young girls. I recently have interns, right? That are at my place of business. I have interns that are from a college somewhere. I will not say which institution, but they are on an internship for two months. And one of the interns, right? She's got the lashes and she's got the beads in the hair and she's young. And she's really in the world. And today I had a conversation with her because, I sent them in and I was asking, like, how is your experience? What are you expecting? And what are you expecting to learn? And what skills do you have? And I was having a conversation with her and I noticed that, she doesn't really open her mouth, like in terms of opening her mouth when she's talking. So everything that you are asking her and she answers, you have to ask, what did you say? Excuse me? Huh? What did you say? And then I looked at her, you know, I looked at her carefully and I noticed that this girl has a whole grill. A grill. You know how these American pop stars, they have these diamonds and silver on their teeth and it's like silver put on top of your teeth, but it covers your teeth completely. Now she has a grill on the top part of her mouth, like literally the whole row of teeth are covered under silver. And my question is, why? Why do you have that? And she's like, no, I just like it. And, you know, it's my thing. And I'm like, how? So you win. Nah. I didn't want to be judgmental. Yeah? But you know, I'm judgmental, right? I didn't want to be, but you guys know that Mina very judgmental. I'm very judgmental. But like the nice thing about me is that I'll tell you exactly why I'm judging you. I'll tell you exactly what I think would have been better, and then or what I think of you, and then I'll also tell you the solutions about it, because I don't just judge you just like that. I judge you on the basis of where you are. You young kids, you young girls, especially the young boys, it's their clothes. It's their clothes and the fact that they cannot articulate themselves properly in any language. And I mean any language. They can't articulate themselves in Afrikaans. They can't articulate themselves in English. They can't articulate themselves in Subia, Lozi. They can't communicate, you know, and that is my problem with the youth boys. But then you find the girls. The girls are walking harlots. Yeah, they're walking harlots. And if you don't know what harlots means, just dig it up. There are so many traits that linger on you later. And I know we were all young. I was not also one of the best youths, you know. I had piercings because I like piercings, to each their own. But I knew how to conduct myself when I am going into the midst of a working space. Now, imagine this young lady with a whole grill is attending to clients. And the clients are coming from all corners of the earth, right? So it's a cuckoo that is going to be attended to by a person with grills. And now you can't even talk properly because I don't know. The grills are giving, I don't know. They are giving better. They are heavy or something, right? Now you can't talk properly. Now the poor old lady has to constantly be asking you, what in guinea? Because if me and my young self, I can't hear you with my young ears, what about a senior citizen? And also, don't you notice that maybe you are not articulating yourself properly? And that was not what I expected. I did not expect, right, for her to have grills. I did not expect to see any cosmetology student, rocking up with grills. It's just the same as you get a doctor, right? A student doctor. And this student doctor is filled with piercings. And when I say piercings, I mean, I'm not talking about you've got a nose ring and then you got a young, upper eye ring. I'm not talking about three piercings. I'm talking about like seven piercings on one face, right? There is a certain distrust that happens. There is a certain uneasiness that happens. And it's not because we don't trust your work. It's because we think that you don't have respect for your work. And that's the honest truth. I think that you don't have respect for your work when you show up to work like that. I feel like if you're going to have your hair pink, right? And you are a doctor, have your hair pink, but also remember that you must tie your hair up. I'm just saying, that's the only way I can understand that you do have a private life. You are a human being, but when you come to work, you make effort for it. So now you've got this long hair that's pink and you are asking me questions, and it seems as if you, like in all of your questions, it seems as if you have no idea what you're doing. And obviously you don't really know everything because you're a student doctor, right? But the way you look plays a role. And unfortunately, I think that our youth is failing to understand that we can only take you seriously when you look serious. And the point of entry is the biggest point. That is your make or break moment. The way you show up, that is your make or break moment. If you're going to be going to an interview and you're a person with tattoos, and it's art. It's art and it's sentimental and it's your body. I get it. Mara, if you're going to be showing up, right? And you've got tattoos and piercings all over the place and red hair, and this is your look, put your hair in order. The piercings that cannot close immediately, take them out and put them in when you get your job. When you have signed your contract, then you can dress in whatever way you want, but also just respect the people that you're dealing with. You understand? We expect so much from one another, and we also expect so much from ourselves. And I think that is the pentacle of disappointment and depression. To lower expectations is focus on realistic goal settings, you know, realistic things. That is how you lower your expectations. Be realistic. Now, if your husband is a serial gambler, how you lower your expectations, darling, is by not expecting this person to change this month's end. We keep doing this to ourselves, and I understand that it is the benefit of the doubt that we have to give other human beings. It is the fact that we are hoping for the best with other people, and we are hoping that this time is the last time, and we are hoping that people will grow and people will learn and they will do better. But in that hope, right, can it just be hope on its own without expectations? Now, you, Wena, You know your husband is a serial gambler, right? You know that this man gambles. This man's whole salary, ne? Why pire mo casino? And every month you are angry. Why? Why are you angry every month? Every month end you are angry. You have been with this person for the past 10 years. And this person has only contributed to your lives for 8 years. Which are not even for 8 years, for 2 years. And then after that, this person showed their true colors and they stopped contributing, and you can't do much about it. But yet every single month, you are disappointed that this man didn't buy anything with his salary. Why? Why? Why are you expecting this person to miraculously change? Is it because you think that your prayers are going out there? Ladies and gentlemen, the only person that can change another person is themselves. We can't change anybody. We can assist them and support them into getting to the place where they can have the realization or the epiphany that their lives are not in order, or we can leave. We all have options and choices, or we can live. But what we won't do is we won't expect things from people that are incapable. And even if they are capable, they are not capable right now. Many of us are expecting, hey, you are expecting kuchaye your husband that drinks like a fish, okuna kuzakironga ntona, and come on and put on $1,000 electricity, and then he went to City of Windhoek to pay the water bill, and then you also expect that he must also buy some groceries, you know, 3,000, and then the rest, maybe he makes 10K, and then the 7,000 he can keep for himself, and you are expecting this, and throughout the month you discuss this, hey, you make plans, do this and do that, and then month end comes, and Tate has done nothing. Jack. Nothing whatsoever. Tate has done nothing. And you are so angry. Uncle Rengino. Wah, wah, wah. Mara, when do you learn, sister? When do you learn to lower your expectations? You know, when you lower your expectations, right? When the person actually does something good, you have gratitude. Now, when your expectations are high, you won't check that he came home at least, ne, with two loaves of bread, a cool drink, and onions and tomatoes. You don't even see that, because you and I, you are expecting the electricity to be paid. You are expecting the kids' school to be paid. You are expecting him to contribute financially to the household that you guys are both inhabiting. You are expecting that, but you don't even see that. So if you lower your expectations, if you put this person in his place and you say, Kucha, this is a zero person. Hey, Elizabeth, this is a zero person. This zero person is not going to assist in this household or in these children. This is who he is. I'm telling you, when you can even sleep, you can sleep peacefully. Whether he comes home at 2 o'clock or he comes home at 9 o'clock, it doesn't matter to you, because you are not expecting anything. And whether he comes home, even if he's falling over there, you are not going to get angry about imaroya ipeni. You're not going to get angry, because you already know. You already know that this person is a zero person, and this person is not going to contribute to anything. And then also, if he comes now with the 2 loaves of bread, mara, he comes with tomatoes and onions and green peppers, and maybe 5 potatoes and 2 loaves of bread, right? At least you can say, Kucha, oh, thank you so much. Because you expected zero from this person, and this person came with these items. You know, it's not as much as what you are putting in, right? But it is something. And that is why I say that we have to look at the conversations that we are having here and apply them to our lives. Now, application in itself is a nightmare. It's a nightmare because it seems as if you are doing all the work and other people are just left to do nothing. It's like you're picking up the weight for the whole world, and the whole world is just sleeping on you, no? And it's just sleeping on you, and it's not fun. But what I'm telling you is that the attitude of gratitude goes a long way. Because if you can be grateful, and I'm speaking to you women. Do you know how many women have, do you know how many of your mothers, ladies and gentlemen, tonight I'm going to tell you guys a secret. I was talking about it with my mom yesterday, and we were laughing about it because it is the reality of Namibian women. Do you know how many women have lied to their children and said that your father bought for you? Do you know? There's a song by Eminem where it's called Mockingbird. Now hush little baby, don't you cry, everything's gonna be alright. I'm a little baby, I told ya, daddy's here to hold ya through the night. And if that mockingbird don't sing and the ring don't shine, I'ma break that birdie's neck, I'ma go back to the jeweler who sold it to ya, get every carrot and that. Now, in this song, Eminem talks about being so broke, right? Being so... That Haley child went through a lot with her parents. Being so broke that his girlfriend had to buy Christmas presents. And you know, these, like these Americans, they really respect Christmas like that. You know, it's their culture. It was so intense. He was so broken. He was so down and under, right? That his girlfriend bought gifts for the children, wrapped them up, and then wrote his name from daddy. Now, do you know how many women in this country have lied to you? Just go back. Just go back and ask yourself. Did my father really? Did my father really buy me those Air Force One? Did my father really pay for school? Did my father really buy that gift? Did he? And this was, Namibian women are covering up for many men not contributing. Fact. Namibian women are covering up. I know that many of us are bashing men, and many of us are keeping men away from their children. And I know that women are nasty. I understand that. Mara, there are women that are not nasty, have never said a bad thing about their father whatsoever. Even though your father is sluggering over there, she would say, wake up and go and help your father. And you are angry, but she doesn't look angry at all. Do you think she's not angry? She's married to an alcoholic that is not contributing, that is abusing her financially, that is abusing her verbally and sometimes even physically. Do you think she is not upset? But for her to have so much composure, eh? For her to have so much composure about your father, and still wake up in the morning to go to work and stuff, or to go and hustle, or to sell those fat cakes. Women, they are trying, right? And they say things like, "O afutiro skora kutate gwe," or "O aningirwa kutate gwe." But truth is, the father didn't do anything. She just doesn't want you to hate your father. Doesn't want you to hate your father. She wants you to keep a good relationship and see your father as a rock star. I've done it too. I've lied. I've lied to my son's face and literally told him, I've lied so many times. I don't even know which lie to catch up on. Why didn't daddy come and get me today? That's a question. And the truth is, I don't know why daddy didn't come and get you. But if I tell the infant that I don't know why daddy didn't come to get you, children have a way of interpreting things internally. I feel like children are so selfish and self-centered, right? That they also develop harmful, negative self-talk, because everything is really just about them. So that's why they say don't fight in front of children and don't do things in front of children, because they will never look at you guys like the adults are fighting. They will always look at you guys like the adults are fighting because I'm not a good child. And that is a selfish way to think, because it's kind of self-centered, right? Like everything is not about you, child, but for them everything is about them, and they internalize that in a very negative way when it comes to abusive and traumatic situations, right? That's why we try and refrain from being abusive to our children and allowing anybody to be abusive to our children and traumatizing our children. We're trying our best as parents, right? Because we somehow understand that children think that everything is about them, even the negative stuff. That's why they can ask you for a PlayStation and there's only 20 units on the electricity. Literally. Like, how can you ask me for a PlayStation when we don't even have electricity? You know, I'm stressing here, kucha orusheno taruha kupua kwa. And you're asking me for a PlayStation, because everything is about them. So my son asks, why didn't daddy come and get me? Now, the truth is, I don't know why daddy didn't come and get him, because I didn't even call daddy to ask Kucha, daddy, why are you not coming to get Elu? But I had to now cover, for father. And I said that, oh, daddy called me and daddy informed me that at work, right, he got another shift that he has to take up and he couldn't come and get you. That is why. But he did call to notify me. That's a blatant lie, my dear. Children will make you liars. It's okay. But that's a blatant lie. And what that lie does, right, is reassure the child that you are important enough. Reassure the child that it is not you, it is the work. Reassure the child that father is thinking about you and father loves you. Reassuring the child that there's nothing amiss. You can still go tomorrow. It's not amiss. It's just not today. You understand? And this is something that has saved my child's relationship with his father and also our co-parenting. I think we are doing an excellent job at co-parenting and we are really, really honestly good at it. And we are really trying. We love that child. You know, that child is our firstborn. Eh? His firstborn, me, my firstborn. We really try because we don't necessarily get along too much, eh? But we really put whatever emotions and whatever sorrows and whatever swear words we have for each other, we put them aside to maintain a good relationship so that we can raise this child, né, in a co-parenting situation that is full of love. And this is exactly the lie that we're talking about. So many women, we cover up. And it's also the same for single fathers, you know. Why don't I live with mommy? Why can't I go and live with mommy? You can tell your son that, mommy's a drug addict. You will never, no, you will not say that mommy's a drug addict or mommy doesn't really want to be a parent. Mommy is too irresponsible. You can never tell your child that. What you do is mommy is too busy. Right? It's too busy right now, with work and stuff. And that is why I have to take care of you because I'm less busier than mommy. And also, no, one day you will go and live with mommy. It's not a problem. It's only that it is my turn to stay with you right now. You see, you can tell the child that the children will grow. The children will see which parent is active and which parent is not. It is not your responsibility as a parent to enlighten your child about the negative aspects of their parent because, right, that child is the only person that is related to both of you. That child is the only person in between you guys. You guys can throw your hands up in the air and say, I'm going, right? But this child is in between and that child is a relative, eh? Or is a family member to you both. So I'm just saying, if we are going to have the concept of expectations, then maybe we should look at, our parents and ask ourselves in honest light, right? Which parent was doing the most and which parent wasn't doing the most? And what was the parent that was doing the most, right? Was doing the most saying about the parent that was not doing much. Now, if it is negative, right, then this gives you an idea of what type of person you are dealing with. And you can heal from this person. You can heal from the negativity. And then you can also answer questions about yourself. If you are from an environment with a toxic mother or a toxic father, the trait of toxicity is going to be inside you. The way your parents are, is exactly how you are going to be, or you are going to try and choose to be the opposite, but something of them will linger into you. Maybe it is the way you answer people. Maybe it is the way you think. Maybe it's how quickly we take. Maybe it's how you receive bad information. Maybe it's one of those things, but there is definitely something. It is in us because we were born empty canvases. And these people, they painted this painting. They say it takes a village to raise a child. Do you know why they said it takes a village to raise a child? They said it takes a village to raise a child because back then it was really a village that was raising the child. It was really a sense of community. But that is not applicable in contemporary times because we live in isolation. Do you know why many of our seniors are not as messed up as we were? Because they lived in community. They lived in a place where it really took a village to raise a child. They didn't have abandonment issues because nobody was holding them, because they were constantly held. It's either they are being held by the other kids, or they were being held by another auntie, or they were being held by somebody, but to be held, they were held. Now, we are living in times, right, where we live in isolation and there's no village to help raise this child, and it's just us and we are overwhelmed. Do you know how many times you've given your child a hug? Your child has attachment issues. Your child has anxiety issues. Your child has stress, right? And abandonment issues, because you went throughout your child's whole entire childhood, right? And you never touched them. You never hugged them. You never put them on your lap. You never had physical contact with your children. And now your children say things like, I'm not a hugger. Why are you not a hugger? Why don't you like to hug people? Who didn't hug you? People that are not huggers are people that don't really feel safe by opening up. In case you are wondering why you hate hugging people, it's because you don't feel safe in opening up, because you had to fight off. You have lived in fright or fight mode. Survival mode. And I want to say to you tonight that I'm sorry you had to live like that, okay? I'm sorry that that was your reality. I'm sorry that those are your demons. And I'm sorry that you have to find it out like this, but it is the way it is. So we're talking about expectations. We're talking about the expectations we have of our parents. We're talking about the expectations we have of our children, our lovers, our peers. We're talking about expectations of grades, expectation of jobs, expectation of things. If we can lower these expectations, like the woman that lowered her expectations towards her alcoholic husband and decided that, tate, ngai tanti contribute, ngai ko stressa yo kutateka. I am going to create my own happiness, and I am going to live in my happiness. I am not going to expect Tate to be paying for anything. It has been 8 years. I understand. On the first time, good evening.
Hello.
I'm preaching to the choir, baby. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Meme. How are you?
I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Am I on
air? Yes, you are, Mama.
I just want the fragrance for
Vinduk. Oh, it's 104.0.
104.0.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, bye, Duncan.
Plaisir, mama.
Okay.
All right. Good evening to you. And it's nice. You know how refreshing it is to have a lady voice on the other side of the mic. It is refreshing. I know I didn't want to bombard her because she already said she doesn't have airtime like that. I didn't want to bombard her, but I understand. Do you guys understand? Do you understand? Holla at me if you understand. 083-288-401. Lower your expectations and avoid disappointment. Lowering your expectations is understanding kucha. Your husband is like that. Eh? He is like that, and that is his reality, and that those are his choices, and those are his circumstances and his situation. It doesn't mean that it's your situation. It just means that this is what's happening on the ground, and it is what it is, right? So when we lower our expectations, right, we can sleep at night knowing that ngero kweta shokweta shangeri neta shineta sha. It's ikandiri metegerero. Etegameno, what did the Quedi call expectancy? Etegameno, etegameno. I'm not expecting anything. I'm not expecting this person to change overnight. I'm not expecting this person to all of a sudden care about what I'm saying and the tears that I'm crying. I'm not expecting this. So I'm letting it go. I'm giving it to God. I'm giving it to my maker. I'm giving this stress away, and I'm going to sleep, and I'm going to eat my food, and I'm going to enjoy my life, and I'm going to try and live my life and the last years I have on earth, right? In absolute blissfulness. That's what I'm going to try and do. And when we let go of these burdens and these expectations that we have, right? Then eventually we come into a space of, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. But before that, ladies and gentlemen, a quick breather.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, You can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe mbali hea di nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lower your expectations, please. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about you. We're talking about you knowing that your friend, ladies and gentlemen, your friend is nasty. Your friend is bad. Your friend has no protocol. She has no name. And this is the friend that you are expecting to protect you. Hey! Woo-ha! Ezakwata. Zarara. Your friend that gossips. Every single story in the streets, she knows about it. Every single situation, she knows about it. You are expecting this person to have a sense of loyalty. You are expecting this person to never betray you. How do you, because we are friends, you know, because we are friends and we love each other, matriarch. And we, like, you know, we've known each other since we were in grade four. And then you want to cry me a river, build a bridge and get over it. Let it go before you end up drowning in all this guilt. Bruh, you wanna cry me a river when this particular person, the chief backstabber, backstabs you? You wanna cry me a river? Why? Why do you wanna cry me a river? Is this not who the person has been? I say be careful of people that talk about other people. Because if people find joy in talking about other people, especially negative things, right? Then when you are not at the table, you will be on the table. You will be the topic. Be careful of people that find joy in other people's misery. Be careful of people that find joy in talking about other people's misery. Do you know why? Because when you are going through misery, you will be the conversation. You'll be the conversation hook, line, and sinker, friend. Chaisal.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.
We all save at you save. Hey, Frinton, we're talking about lowering our expectations. How are we going to lower our expectations? We are going to be focusing on realistic goals. What is our goal? We want to be friends with Miriam. We want to be loving with Miriam. We want to be in one environment with Miriam and at peace with Miriam. Mara, we understand that Miriam is like this, so we are not going to be telling Miriam our things left, right, and center, because if it in the event that Miriam is going to spill the beans, of which she does, because she has told us things about her mother also, and her mother is somebody that gave birth to her, right? In the event that she spills the beans, I don't expect any less, and that's why I didn't put myself out there. And I know that you, if you are anything like me, you're probably thinking, yeah, but why do I have to alter myself, me? Eh? Why do I have to be the one to suffer? Why can't I have an open and nice relationship with this person and not hold back because of her qualities and her traits? Then get a new friend. Get a new friend. Cultivate the attitude of self-compassion. Now, I understand, Chomi, that we did not get taught self-compassion. If you were taught self-compassion, please come forward. Come stand here in front of the class so that we can see what people with self-compassion look like. Because we were not taught self-compassion at all. We were not. And self-respect is different from self-compassion. Self-respect and dignity is very much different, right? Because how? Ladies and gentlemen, we were told to be kind. We were taught to be kind to others. We were told to do things unto others that we want to be done unto us. What we want, love thy neighbor as you love thyself. That one is a bit difficult, because I don't really hear anybody. The way you are loving yourself, you must love your neighbor. Eh? How? Nah. That one you can come and explain it better to me, because you know, me, I expect you guys. I lowered my expectation even with you guys. I know that even if you are having airtime, even if you are having data, I know that you will not call and participate. I lowered my expectation. That's why me, I come to work and I give my best. Eh? And if you call, you call. If you don't call, you don't call. I want you to call. Mara, my expectations are so low for you guys. I don't expect you guys to participate. I expect Love of the Nation to participate. I expect that the Tonata to participate. I expect that the Buana to participate. These are the three people that I expect to participate. That is it. I come to work for these three individuals. You know, Skucha, like, they must have the best of me. If they want to enter the Kwedi, if they want to participate, I will give my best, and then they come, they participate. Mara, I lowered my expectations, because you know what? People will disappoint you. Your audience will disappoint you. They will disappoint you so bad that you might be thinking that, my goodness, is it me? But luckily, I also have a few of those that come through and say, Kucha, they reassure me and they validify me and say that, you know, even if we're not calling, we're listening, okay? But you people, you don't miss the show, but you never call. I don't know you even. It's been 4 years we are in this relationship, and I don't even know your name. Imagine. Do you think that I would have survived here if I had high expectations from you guys? No, No. I lowered my expectations. I lowered them. I lowered them here to grassroots. Kucha, I am going to give the message. And I'm going to do my best every single day. If they call, they call. If they don't call, they don't call. It's all good. But ladies and gentlemen, maybe, just maybe, right? Us lowering our expectations is actually our road to success. It is actually how we become the people that we've always wanted to be. Maybe, just maybe. But let us listen to a segment from Sarah Hoffman that is talking about lowering your expectations could be the road to your success. Because I'm a strong believer. If you're not expecting anything from anyone, whatever they do is whatever they do that is good, right, is met with genuine happiness. It's met with genuine surprise. It's met with genuine gratitude. Imagine your child that is always sneaking out of the house and is always gone every single Saturday and Sunday. Your child is gone. And every time you go into their room, they are not there. And you stop expecting them to be in their rooms, right? What happens is that you let ontengingono, you let that rock go. You let that rock go, and then you trust in the process. One day, right, your child is going to notice that you don't look for them anymore. And they are going to wonder, why doesn't she look for me anymore? And that's the part where your child is going to start staying in the house and opening the door so that you, when I, you can see that she's home. Sometimes, right? Sometimes doing nothing, not scolding, is really honestly the answer. Sometimes, right? That alcoholic husband of yours can change when you stop expecting from him. Because the little that he will do will be met with gratitude, because you are not expecting much from him. Now, when you are expecting a lot from him, all the little things that are good that he does, you don't notice them, because he didn't do the one big thing that he was supposed to do. And that makes him feel like, I'm trying, but this woman doesn't see me. This woman doesn't notice my efforts, right? And that's the look. But it comes from expectations. And also, it's not yourself that created that element of doubt. It is them. They are the ones that created that within you. Because year in and year out, this person is not changing. So it's not your fault, okay? I'm saying, in order for you to make things work, you need to lower your expectations. When you lower your expectations and you expect, don't even lower them, just take them all away. Eliminate your expectations, right? When the things are, when nice things are done and you didn't expect it, it is a breath of fresh air. Ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not take ownership or do not claim ownership to anything that we are, that we play, that we display to you on our programs. This is strictly for illustration purposes. This is strictly to make the conversation. This is strictly for insight from other experts around the world. So this is not an Eagle FM property. It is a clip that we are using to solidify our case. Ladies and gentlemen, let us do the things that need to be done, Hasho.
When I was a young child and people asked me what I wanted to be when I was older, I had two dreams in mind. I either wanted to be a doctor or a chicken catcher. I'm now a professional freestyle skier. I specialize in slopestyle and in big air. I've even won some bling. And I also have a degree in neuroscience. Now, for the curious minds in here, it was my older brother, Julian, who inspired me to be a chicken catcher. He told me that they made a lot of money around Christmas time because he said that everybody ate chicken for their Christmas dinner. Well, I'm 28 years old. I have still never caught a chicken in my life. And perhaps that's not so bad, especially now that I know people don't even eat chicken at Christmas. So I discovered freestyle skiing at the age of 20 when I was in my first year of university. Winning an X Games and an Olympic gold medal 7 years after this picture was taken is a fate I never expected. Oh, there's no commentary. Oh, this is Sarah Hoffland dropping in switch. She's doing a switch double cork 900. Sarah Hoffland straight out of Geneva, Switzerland. And now she's dropping in switch again, going in for the switch double 1080, and it's a gold medal. Yeah, you don't have to clap. This is a TED talk. We haven't got much time. So ever since the Olympic Games in Pyeongchang in 2018, I found that a lot of people have taken a vivid interest in my unusual journey. And they've gone as far as describing it as remarkable or inspiring. But the truth is, my journey has been an absolute roller coaster of failures, luck, and successes. What I learned throughout my convoluted journey, and perhaps the reason why it's so convoluted, is that nothing ever goes to plan. Whenever I set myself ambitious goals or high expectations, I found that I would just try way too hard, and I would just end up completely blowing it. So here's one thing that I've started doing a little bit more recently. Lowering expectations. Now, expectations, they're usually set when we're very young children by our parents, carers, or teachers. And they are the ones who will teach us their values and ideals. And we get praised when we meet those expectations, and we get reprimanded when we don't. And it's not actually until we get a little bit older that we start having expectations of our own. The natural progression in one's life means that eventually we start setting goals of our own and we decide where we want to set the bar. Now, of course, there is a transition period in between being a child and an adult where we sometimes share but more often clash with our elders' expectations. Called being a teenager. Parents in this room, how many times might you have asked your teenage kids to tidy their bedrooms or to clean the dishes? And when you get home from work, neither of those things have been done. Of course, sometimes people expect a bit more from us than what we want to or are able to deliver. But expectations go both ways. Sometimes we expect too much of ourselves, and that's when the people who care about us will try to bring us back down to earth. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I told my doctor that I wanted to be a doctor myself, and this is what he said. Well, if you just keep working hard and get good grades, you'll see. It'll just happen. Well, it's definitely missing a few things, but honestly, this advice has really stuck for my entire life. And what I love about it is the simplicity of it. One thing leads to another. Now, the fundamental problem with it is that he didn't account for uncontrollable factors. And so this narrative that if we work hard at something, we will achieve what we want, it's just not true. I expected a lot of myself when I was in secondary school. I spent most of my teenage life trying to get into medical school, and it's something that I worked really, really hard for. I actually ended up in the local newspaper when I was 18 years old for having the highest grades in my school, At the time, I was volunteering in two different hospitals on three different wards. I was working for the ambulance service, and I was attending every single conference that I could go to on how to get into medical school. And I never got in. I applied five times over, five separate years, to a total of 9 different universities across the UK. And I never got accepted. Now, at that point, I'm thinking that maybe I should have become a chicken catcher after all. So why didn't I get into med school? You know, I might have had the best portfolio that I could have had for myself and given my absolute best. But since there's only a limited number of places in medical school in the UK, perhaps it just means that the other successful applicants were better than me. Maybe the person who read my personal statement didn't really like it. And there's absolutely nothing that I can do about this. So what my doctor should have said is, if you work hard, then you will probably get good grades. And then if you do get good grades, then you'll see. It might happen. Well, in skiing, it's the same thing. I can train as hard as I want. I can do my very best performances and even get a good score. But there is absolutely nothing that I can do about the other competitors being better than me. And so setting ourselves expectations like, I will become a doctor, or I will be the next world champion in my sport, they're just not very good goals to set. They don't really give you any guidance on how to actually get there. A better goal in skiing, for example, might be, I'm going to learn these sets of tricks, and then if I can do them in competition, then I'm probably going to do quite well. And if I don't, I'm just going to have to keep working, keep practicing. I was born and raised in Switzerland, and then I moved to the UK when I was 12 years old. And I went to university in Cardiff, and that's where I discovered freestyle skiing. I quickly learned to do backflips on my skis on a dry slope, which it's a carpet, and I swear it's made up of lion's claws. I put my teeth through my lower lip on this occasion. I took part in all the university competitions. I won my first pair of twin tip skis, which you need for freestyle skiing, and I was hooked. So when I finished university in 2013, I decided to pursue a new passion. And I decided that I was going to go and do a ski season. Just 1 year is what I told my parents. 1 year of fun, and then I'll get a real job. Well, it's now nearly 2020. I'm still doing ski seasons. So this is me in France. My first season was in Tignes, and it was fantastic. I lived in a 13 square meter studio. I was completely broke. And in contrast to the UK, the weather was either excellent or excellent. It was either sunny or snowing. And when I finished that ski season, I did actually go back to Manchester, to England. I got a real job working in an office. I was a consultant or something like that in a pharmaceutical firm. I hated it. And so I decided to go and do a second ski season. And this time I went to Mirabel in France. And that ski season, I decided to take part in my first ever international competition. And the Swiss team was there, and I knew that the Swiss coach was there. And obviously I was extra nervous, and I completely crashed. But he still came up to me at the end of the competition, and he said to me in his very thick Swiss German accent, "Hallo, bist du Swiss?" "Yeah, I'm Swiss. Do you want to ski for Switzerland?" "Yeah." And so in May that year, 2015, I started training with the Swiss ski team. And once again, I'd reset my expectations. I was going to be a professional skier. Nah, it did not happen that fast. In November that year, I crashed doing a ski trick that I knew very, very well, and I broke my ACL in my left knee. The ACL is a key ligament, and it has a very long recovery time, and it meant that I was going to miss the entire ski season. I went from having absolutely no real life plans to having a calendar full of really exciting competitions. I was supposed to travel to South Korea to compete in the Olympic test event. I was supposed to ski in a stadium full of people in Boston. And I was supposed to travel the world on my first ever World Cup tour as a professional skier. And just like that, in a flash of a moment, I completely blew it. I was 25 years old, which is considered too old to begin a career in freestyle skiing. And I spent the next 9 months rehabbing in the gym and relearning how to walk. I'm going to tell you something. I still don't know if I suffered more physically or mentally. So what I learned during my injury time is that becoming a professional skier, it's just not the right goal. There is no guidance on how to get there. So when I came back in the winter of 2017, I just focused on having fun, on skiing well, and skiing smart. It was not about winning competitions. It wasn't about becoming a pro skier or becoming famous or any of that. Skiing well and skiing smart. And I ended that season world number one, and I qualified for the Olympics. It was super exciting, but I remembered my goal. So then it's the winter of 2018. The pressure's on. Everyone is talking about the Olympics. I quite often wondered what sort of state of mind an athlete must be in the night before their Olympic event. Do they even sleep? I just picture them lying in their bed, daydreaming about standing on the top of the podium, wrapped in their nation's flag, smiling to the cameras and celebrating their biggest win ever. This is how the eve of my Olympic event went. I was crying for an hour and a half on the phone to my boyfriend who was back in France. Everything was hurting. My knee, both my heels, my back, and my self-esteem. We had 3 training days before the Olympics, and it went terribly for me. I was crashing hard, I was hurting myself, and I just completely lost my self-confidence. The stress was through the roof. So it gets to like 8 or 9 p.m. the night before my competition, and there is one last thing that I really need to do. Relax. And I tried the whole close your eyes and breathing slowly thing, and it didn't work for me. So I went to a party and had a few glasses of wine. Whoopsie. An Australian snowboarder, Scotty James, had just won a bronze medal in the halfpipe event, and he was celebrating in a nearby hotel. Now, of course, I'm walking to this hotel, and who do I see on the way? My coach. And he's like, Sarah, where are you going? Meeting a sponsor? But I'm so glad that I went to this party, because when Scotty was on stage and he was talking to the cheering crowd, I was so inspired by his calmness and his humble demeanor. And he really reminded me of the reason why I ski. Because it makes me happy. My boyfriend often tells me before I'm stressed out, before a competition, he says, it's just skiing. And you have no idea how much weight that takes off my shoulders. So then, it's the day of the event, and I wake up with a smile on my face. I'd had a bit of an epiphany, and I realized that it no longer mattered if I came first or last. it just, I'd reset my expectations. I'd lowered my expectations, and it, I was just so happy to be there. I was an Olympian, and I had absolutely no expectations. What I wanted from this day, actually, was just to show the world what freestyle skiing was all about. I wanted to show my family and friends who were watching on TV and who were there what, where passion and commitment can lead you.
Get all your essential products for just $99 at USAID. 1 kilogram each of Rice King rice, Top Score or Bokomo Super Maize meal, Sugar King white or brown sugar, 500 grams Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliters Right Brand sunflower seed oil. All five products for only $99. You save. I save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
And so this is me, just before I drop, just before my very final run. And this is something that I always do. So I'll fist bump my coach, and then I ski down a little bit, and I'm by myself. And I always look at the course in front of me for a couple of seconds, and I just tell myself, all right, that's it. Have fun. And this is me having fun, clearly. Now, there is a downside to winning big competitions like the Olympics. Actually, I was a little bit worried about winning the Olympics myself. I was scared that I would be demotivated if I did win. And actually, when I was researching this TED talk, I found that a third of athletes who are in this position, who win major competitions, don't perform as well afterwards. And if you put yourself in their shoes, if this has been something that you've worked for your entire life, the journey ends, and there's nothing left to fight for. And also, when you win that kind of competition, everyone expects so much more of you. You expect so much more of yourself. And so, 2 years on from this day, I'm starting to understand what the real success was for me in this story. And it's not the fact that I've got a few extra Instagram followers. For me, it's just the fact that I just didn't lose the drive to keep skiing and to keep progressing, and that I've managed to stay on top of my game. So a lot of people have asked me, especially journalists, what do you want to do, Sarah? What are your goals now? What do you expect? You've won everything. What are your goals? And also, how much longer do you intend to ski? As if I didn't know that I'm the oldest competitor on the tour. And I always say the same thing. I always ramble on about which ski trick I'm going to learn next, because I know that's something that I can work towards. The truth is, I have absolutely no idea what I want to do in the future. And I realize that this is something that a lot of people are actually in this same position. So this is my advice. Find something that you love. Work hard at it. And then lower your expectations so you can't be disappointed. And then you'll see. It might happen. Thank you very much.
Lower your expectations to avoid disappointment. That is exactly what we are talking about, guys. No one can disappoint you when you expected nothing. Imagine, right? Imagine making somebody a bride. Imagine making people groomsmen and bridesmaids to your wedding, right? And when you get engaged, everybody's happy and woo, woo, oh my goodness. And, so you go through the process of, okay, so we are looking for garments and we're looking for what? So please pay your money by August, for example. Now this is December. Yeah, you're telling them, please make your payments by August. And everybody's like, yeah, of course, absolutely. And you bring the price all the way down because, you know, the economy and you're being reasonable, and everybody that is in this circle is your friend or someone you love. someone you appreciate. So you're not trying to break their pockets. You know, they're already going out of their way to make it to you and to assist you on your big day. So you basically go through the year, or the first half of the year, just encouraging people to make payments. So you have a stash of 10 people from your side, 10 people from Tate's side. And three of your people pay, and then another two pay. So you have five people that have paid. So now you have bought everything and you're just waiting, you know, for people to start making their payments. And then bam, Tate's side, nobody pays. And then the other five from your side, they don't pay. Ow. And August is here, and the wedding is now in September. If you didn't expect them to show up for you, if you didn't expect them to pay, if you didn't expect them to do anything, you wouldn't be so disappointed. If you didn't have the expectations that you had of people, because you include people, and this happens a lot with weddings, right? You include people that you assume would never disappoint you. You include people that you assume love you and they would move heaven and earth for you. You assume this. And through this assumption, right? That is where the heartbreak lies. And it's not because people love you any less. And it's not because people are not there. And it's not because people hate you or they are jealous of you. It's not any of that. Take that out of your head. It is just life situations. Somebody really wants to be a bridesmaid, but has nothing. And they don't have the courage to tell you that I don't have. They don't have that kind of courage. They have gone through so much during the year. They thought that their financial situation was going to be better. And it just never picked up. It never picked up. And maybe that year was just not their year and it was not their season, you know. And they didn't have the heart to tell you that they don't have, but they would really like to attend because they don't want you to buy for them and they don't want you to already spend on them, to spend on them and them becoming a liability. And others were in the hospital and their hospital bills are killing them. Others lost children. There's so much that goes on, right? And if we don't expect anything from anyone, if we don't expect people to show up, right? The ones that show up, you're so happy. The ones that really do pay their money, you are so happy. And those that don't, you understand. You understand and you can always ask, right? What happened? What happened to this year? Like, what happened to you this year? And if they're open enough, it won't be a story of, yeah, I mean, I just didn't want to spend on your wedding. No. When you listen to people's stories and you understand and you hear their situations, right? You would understand better. Now, many of us leave those weddings very heartbroken and abandoned, feeling abandoned, right? But we never even asked the question of what happened. Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. How are you doing, Pops?
It's a big problem.
What is a big problem?
You know, we are in darkness here.
Oh.
It's a very, very serious problem, my friend.
Yeah, that one is a serious problem.
I'm telling you,
my dear.
You know when you used to call the time when you were still young? Caprivi. Do you remember the name Caprivi?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, if you used to do, the problem is when you start from Divundu, in Parila, that is Capri. It was called a country of like a region in the time, but it was a country even before we went to war. The whole country went to war and we went to war. It's like that.
Okay.
But now it's like Igu FM. It's leaving us again. You know, if I don't enjoy Instagram and the email, we don't listen to you. You can ask Yves Nengera. Nobody is enjoying your own radio now. now. I left Instagram. And whenever you are in Instagram, it's like the past of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And today, and then you can speak. It's Mr. Mandela the one who is speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is coming to the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody is making the network to become together.
Mm-hmm.
Now we were supposed to enjoy what you are speaking. What are you doing today?
Today, I'm talking about expectations.
Expectations,
what we are expecting other people to do and to not do.
Or what you are expecting.
Yes, expectations. Now, my argument is that...
Expectation in terms of...
anything.
A human being.
Yes, our expectations towards the world.
Our own prediction.
Our expectations, yes.
That is prediction.
Yes.
Because you cannot say, I don't think like a vision.
Mm.
What is our vision?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The vision is like prediction.
Yeah.
What are we feeling and who are we going to give the example of what we are going to think of?
Okay, so the reason that I'm asking this is my theory around all the hurt that is going on and all the disappointment.
Oh, because you see what is happening today.
Okay, what is happening today?
Yeah, on our expectation, me, I can say, it's like, it's not an answer, I think.
Okay.
It's about loneliness.
Okay.
And the loneliness is not going to become you or me.
Mm.
It's not going to become of you and me. Now, that one tends us to be like, who was yesterday?
Mm.
And then who is the kid and then who is old?
Mm.
That is the question of saying, what are we going to have tomorrow?
Okay.
And then what was yesterday.
But what if we want to have something tomorrow and then it doesn't come?
You don't do that. You can make your own thinking today without yesterday.
Nobody. That's why I'm saying, what if it doesn't come?
Thing. You cannot, you know that question is very dangerous.
Why is it dangerous?
Because you cannot grow today and know tomorrow.
Of course you can't grow today and know tomorrow.
You cannot be born today.
Yes, but we're not talking about babies. But we're not talking about babies. Sir, we're not talking about babies. I'm asking you, what are your expectations?
Those are the answers. Those are the answers of some questions you are asking.
Okay, those are the answers. Okay, but I'm asking. Yeah, I'm asking you.
You are asking, I'm listening to you.
Alright, so listen.
Listen. Our expectation.
You must listen.
What are we expecting?
You must
tomorrow?
Listen to what I'm going to ask you now.
Okay.
All right. So, we are talking about expectations in general, right?
You are talking about
expectations.
Those are the things.
Listen to what I'm saying, sir.
Okay.
Yes, I'm saying that is what we are talking about. We are talking about expectations. Now, my argument is that if we don't have high expectations of anything, then we will not be disappointed. What do you think about that statement?
Okay.
Is that statement true or false?
No. That is not an answer and that is not a question.
Okay.
The thing is, yes, what can I explain to you a bit is about to, if I tell you, if you were not born, were you going to be saying you were not supposed to be there or you were supposed to be there?
How can I say something when I'm not born?
That's why you say, tomorrow is not going to be there or you're going to be there. Have you seen the sun coming right, coming and set before you are not seeing them?
How can I think anything if I'm not born?
Our own tomorrow is made about today.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? That question was supposed to be, what do we do today which we can expect tomorrow to have, because we prepare things for today, not tomorrow.
But our expectations must be based off of ourselves, not other people.
They come
not
from
other
what
not
happened.
Other yes, but not other people. Do you know that most of us are disappointed because of how things turn out? Because we expect things to be a certain way. You never expected to break up with your first girlfriend, but it happened.
But if we
lowered our expectations, it would not hurt us. Do you know that? Yes, I hear you, but you must learn to listen.
Yes.
So do you know that I attribute 90% of the gender-based violence, right, or the gender killings or the crimes against each other here in this country, it comes from expectations. When people don't meet your expectations, you are expecting your woman to be faithful. That is what you are expecting. You are expecting her to be faithful. When she is unfaithful, what do you do?
Am I speaking to Mitiyak?
Yes, me, my dear.
Me, Mitiyak.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the guy you used to tell you guys, the guy who used to speak to you.
My dear, there are many guys that speak to me.
He's the one you are talking about.
I understand.
You know where I'm talking about now.
Yeah.
Where am I now?
You're in Katima.
I'm in Katima.
Yes.
And then whenever I was in Ovambalan.
Yes.
You know, I spent my 28 years discovering what is this country.
Yes.
28 years. You know, whenever I was 25 is when I make a baby for the first time.
You're even better as we made
a... Who got a baby again. That's why I'm telling you that tomorrow when you say, what are you expecting?
Yeah.
What am I expecting tomorrow?
Mm.
Tomorrow is built by me today.
Okay. And if it doesn't go your way?
Today, no.
If it doesn't go your way, because you are expecting tomorrow to be a certain way because you worked on it today. And then tomorrow is not the way you want it to be, then what happens?
That is the answer.
Is that not disappointment?
That is the answer I wanted to give you. Do you listen now?
I'm listening.
That is the answer I want to give you. Growth of human, it's never been expected to be born. But whenever they die, they don't expect death. Mm. You understand what I'm telling you?
Mm.
If you listen to whatever, since my participation in this radio, since it was given to be there by the person who was singing, he never started being on the radio before. He worked for the radios of other people who were there before.
Mm.
Then, whatever we are building to get is whatever it was not there. Whatever you are speaking there, as you speaking, it is not that maybe whatever you are announcing today or whenever we are changing words today,
mm.
You expected to be called by me.
No.
Those are expectations. Mm. Those are expectations. If you don't understand the knowledge
that is what I'm saying.
I didn't expect you to call on the radio today.
And I didn't expect your call.
That's why I say you never expected me to call you today.
And I didn't expect your call. You are correct.
Yeah. Now, how do you question yourself to say, what will be your expectation?
But do you know why I am pleased that you called?
It is fear.
No.
Fear.
Listen to what I am saying. Listen to what I am saying. No. You, no.
No.
No. No.
No.
No, sir.
Mitriyak.
Say.
Mitriyak.
Say.
Sometimes
you see what I'm trying to explain to you, right?
I know your question.
No, you don't know it. Because if you understood what I was saying, then you would you don't understand. And I'm telling you because I am it's not overstanding. What I'm trying to tell, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. Say, you don't understand. Say, you don't understand. That is why I'm saying that. Listen to what I'm saying. There is no such thing as overstanding. You are overstanding over what? No such thing.
I'm overstanding of what
there is no, there is no such thing. Listen, I am telling you, right? I'm telling you that because I didn't expect any. I'm telling you that because I didn't expect you to call. When you call, right, I am happy. Me. I did not expect you to call. We still have expectations, sir. And the thing that is beating us, the thing that is beating us is our expectations.
I can expect you to speak something.
You can expect that. And when I don't give you an opportunity to speak, is that not disappointment that you are brewing?
You know, whenever people are closing, while they are
watch this quickly. Uh-huh. Just watch quickly. Watch. All right, that's the watch. All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about lowering our expectations. The reason that bad things, we are doing bad things, right, is because we expect too much from people that cannot live up to our expectations. But the thing that is killing us is our expectations, because we are expecting from people that are human beings, that have their own minds, that have their own bodies. You understand? So, for example, the reason I would say that people are, maybe some men are killing their women because their women have been unfaithful and don't want them anymore or whatever, is because they never expected that woman to not want them ever. They never expected that woman to ever cheat on them. They never expected that woman to go with someone else. They never expected that woman to not want to be part of the relationship anymore. So if we lower this thing of expecting something or expecting people to behave in a certain way, right? Then when the disappointment comes, it doesn't hit so hard because we were not expecting them to stay forever. Good evening. Ooh, I love it here. I love it here. I did not expect the drama. You see? And that's why I'm so thrilled when the drama comes. I'm like, woo! I never expected it, you know? And if we could look at, for example, if we could look at the relationships that are drowning, right? We can say that the one thing that beats everybody is expectations. It's really expectations. Now, expectations are not bad, right? They're only bad when they hinder you. When you are expecting something all the time and it doesn't come, and then it messes with your mental health, right? Then that's when expectations are a problem. Because if you are expecting something and everything goes your way, then we don't have a problem with expectations. We only have a problem with our expectations when our expectations are not met, right? Hello?
Matriarch.
Yes, sir.
You were supposed to be my wife.
I'm telling you. And every day
because
we are just
fighting. Because in our house, it's going to be fire.
I'm telling you.
Me, I know what I want to tell you.
Okay.
But you used to jump on conclusions.
I don't jump on conclusions. I'm sitting down.
You like to argue with me.
I don't like to argue.
To argue.
Me, I'm a very nice person.
I needed to explain a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never explained something.
Mm-hmm.
I used to feel you are confident.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think they dwell in you because of following us on this.
Okay.
Everything we do today mm-hmm. is starting from when it was not there.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you people, you never even knew what it was. You remember the time when Mr. Magic came?
No. Of course
a
not.
A kid of 3 years. Mm. A kid of 3 years.
Mathematics came from where?
I want to explain to you.
Mm.
I want to explain to you because the country we got it through whenever people they were still wearing skins.
Mm.
And they started from the side of the other people and then it went to the other people.
Mm.
You see that one.
Okay.
It is not that maybe whenever the West became clever,
mm.
it was center first in Windhoek.
Mm.
But the people who knew first, they were not in Windhoek. They were in the East before Windhoek is existing. But they never been sharing the ideas of the people who came from the South in the center. From Orange River, because of our own participation in going to mines, which was Johannesburg.
Okay.
The brain we have today
mm-hmm.
of chasing what we like,
mm-hmm.
it is started from different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever it is going now,
mm-hmm.
it's like anybody who chances to have that opportunity, he can talk to people like he don't care.
Okay.
But the people who suffered for that, they are still even burning in the same understanding like we are speaking to you and me.
Okay.
But we got no connotations of togetherness of before.
Mm.
Before togetherness was even fought for to be together, but even today we are still rejecting of what we can do. But not knowing, we are not going to be permanent.
Mm.
On togetherness we want. Do you understand me?
I hear you.
No one today can predict what is tomorrow. But the today we are predicting today is the things we wanted. We wanted, but we cannot say it because we cannot do it.
Mm.
In Namibia, where today we are, we call ourselves to be few, small as we are.
Mm.
But we are not small, we are increasing.
Mm.
But nobody rejected the prediction of killing them for us to find space. And they found us, we are not killed before the people who never knew they will live or they will die. Like, when we're speaking to you, I never expected my father, or even we don't go to separate you with Sema. Because the prediction we had, it is like whenever people who understand together, they will make Namibia the other world which we don't know, because I never know the parts of this country before I was born.
Mm.
But the time when friendship became, we were born by people who are friends. We learned something of togetherness, which we never even concluded because it was not our participation, because we never know the part of what is our country.
Mm.
But the time we are growing is when we got expectations because of the area where we are sitting.
Mm.
Environment study is the school for us today. But it was not the school of those times for the people who are different places coming together.
Mm.
It was the area of persons who are there or grandees who are there knowing how to go far to go and catch and bring where they are living, where they get food is too far.
Mm.
Are we now, say, if we are going to give pension to everyone, saying we are having payments for every person to buy. Are the food going to come from heaven, or the food is going to be made by people?
By people.
Those are the questions which you are asking.
Okay.
That's where
that
is.
Oh, is that what I'm asking? Okay, cool.
No, the way I want you to listen to me.
I'm listening and
yes,
I hear you.
That is the same when I say, if you don't create employment, what do you know the word employment?
Mm.
The word itself, employment, means somebody have to search for anything he have to get.
Mm.
But if I tell you that create employment, even a house, a person who sleeps outside.
We are going for a break. Just hold the line, okay?
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian,
passionately feeding the nation.
Namib Mills, feeding the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Pulling Heartstrings. Hello, hello, sir.
I'm still with you.
Okay, wonderful. You were saying?
I'm still with you. The radio, when it started, we were there.
Mm-hmm.
The life we are still having is because of it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to contribute since it started, to give those e-wallets, those whatever, it was there. Mm-hmm. Because the person who started, he never started on the only go. No.
Mm.
He suffered for it.
Mm.
And I came back where his father was.
Mm.
Where he was moving, where he was eating fish, where he was eating animals like hippopotamus.
Mm.
Even the one whom I used to call Monica, the one with the Christinas and others.
Mm.
You see why I went back? I went back, well, I'm talking to you now.
Mm.
I went back, but we didn't face each other straightforward like this. He could tell you this cowboy is covered a lot.
Mm.
Grade 1 of NAS Angola.
Mm.
In Nyango.
Mm.
It is me. That time, me, I was not supposed to be in kinder even.
Mm.
I was supposed to be in grade 5. But I have to become a kindergarten person. And I'm still the understanding person of saying the world is not for me. The world is for everything which was supposed to be on earth.
Mm.
I'm here at home and I'm talking to you. Mm. When I'm saying this radio was supposed to be very vibrant and like it's the freedom radio.
Mm.
Freedom which I say for me,
mm,
whereby everyone, even our president when he was a young lady that time, with Nazangwa in Lusaka that side, when they were still at school in the 80s, when we were small.
Mm.
Remember, I'm now 56.
Mm.
When I'm telling you prediction, it's the one which is saying imaginations. There is a long understanding of the question of today.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, what do you think tomorrow will be? That word is not from there where I was in November and where I took 28 years, where I came again. And I'm still living like I'm in Obambaland.
Mm.
Remember the time when you told me, when we were arguing about, when we were talking about, not arguing, when we were discussing or just only talking about why do you make a Vambo if you are a Capricorn? I got that record I used to listen to it when I don't even enjoy Eagle FM on Instagram because sometimes I use a small phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I still have that record of you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used to ask the gender ministry to have that recording for me and you as a Vambo girl, and me as a Vambo, as a Caprivian man, what was supposed to be for Caprivians to fight for their side and the Vambos to fight for their side.
But why do we not want to be together? Why do we want to be separate?
That is the thing which I was saying. Sometimes it's fair. For us, sometimes there are some questions we need to produce and some questions we don't. Our life, our life, it is not the like the wheel or the tire of the car, whereby it steps on things which it doesn't know. Because the driver is inside, the tire is outside. Now we are living on whenever we want to budget. The budget of us is the one which is killing us. We don't know whether who are budgeting are the leaders or who are living in that budget are the leaders who are older than their budget. That is what is going on in Namibia.
Okay.
If we say we budget for poverty, we don't know who is in poverty, whether it's a young woman or it's an old woman. That is what is our future. You made it very well for
but
me.
But what were you expecting to Namibia to be?
That question is very nice.
What were you expecting Namibia to be?
Yeah, that question is...
No, but I'm asking you now. I'm asking you now. What were you expecting Namibia to be like after independence?
We were expecting Namibia to be okay, educated. And then knowing we were supposed to educate ourselves before we learn from others. We were supposed to complement our own things, which we do our own, before we get things to add to ourselves, but we are rushing on things which was the people gave to us to learn to, because they are buying it and they are using it. You know, 2002.
Now you are disappointed.
No.
Are you not disappointed?
We have, the disappointment I have, let me tell you.
Yes.
The disappointment I have is just because nobody is going to grow before his brain.
Okay. Elaborate.
My energy, yes. Your own brain can think of things you cannot do. You know that? Educated people do things by hand. Themselves. Why? Because they learn from what they see with their eyes and they compare and then they win. But here in Namibia, we never want that education. Somebody who is doing things which he can use, he is going to teach people by words before they cannot do things.
Yeah.
Even whenever we are having people who are teaching in schools, you can tell a child to carve a cooking stick. But the teacher doesn't know how to carve a cooking stick.
Yeah.
Do you think that is normal education?
No.
The things we do, Nitriya, I was in Ovamboland. I'm the part of the people. I opened the Utapi War Museum, that one. Nobody contributed things for them to historically know what is Utapi War Museum. When there was Inambao. In new era. I was all over Ungomba, all over. I'm the only man who came back again at home, finding that in our own museum here at home, where white people build that museum, a white man build a museum of the history, you don't know. But even if I call that the Art Council of Namibia, appoint me to give you the knowledge and the know-how of everything we do, they sell. But what are we doing? Now the president even is a woman, but to all men who rule this country, you remember? I'm telling you, it's not an insult. My kid who is in High Court in Oshakati, my kid who is in High Court in Oshakati, he can support his mother, who is now committing adultery against me, while she is the one who forced me to get married in certificate, with a patient like that. But now I found a woman who was having a last born of 2009, and now is even running after five men whom I know. But the law is still saying, I married, but I'm separated to that one by law. The country, it is in shambles. There is no future without donation of the money. The reservoirs of this country is not for men. It's for the women now. Because gender can control anybody. No one is powerful in this country. You can do whatever you want, I do whatever I want. Even to fight, it's just soldiers thinking that that one is going to disturb the world, do what you want. They can come to you if you are powerful to understand what you want to make for the people. And they don't even know what they are doing. Yeah. Those are the things where you ask that question.
Yeah.
That question, if you ask the question of the person who made this country, is unfair.
Yeah.
I can write a question to a minister who doesn't know even how to minister. He minister you on paper because he learned on Instagram. Now, are you going to be on... that is the minister whom I know. I know a lot of them there who never participated on fighting, but they are sitting on chairs of ruling you. Do you think me, I can be in November and if I know that fire to me is normal, but to them it's not normal. This is the country which we are in. We are not ruling by understanding now what is the world. Even if you understand, if you feel what I feel now, you can even, starting from whatever, I was imprisoned here, me. Because I got my wife with another man. By law, me, I got the whole baby with my wife. All the children until to the last born. But I signed the paper of marriage with that woman. I got separated in Utapi. To say, me, I'm wrong person. But I'm the one who educated that woman. That woman is like, is running mad like a donkey which does not know whether to drink water or not. Now he's catching even a young man, he can go, he marry, he go. He marry, he go. Now, what conscience in me tells me to go back in my mother's womb?
No.
Those are the things which the government is putting children or young men in prison. For justice, to say fairness of America, not fairness of them. Because they sold their own houses. They say Namibia full of women, they are not married. They are not married because even in men, they are no longer responsible of things which they cannot control. Because which controls the country is the paper. And the people who are put in uniform, who does not know the dignity of whatever a human being can be? What is love? A woman needs love. A woman needs control. A human being needs control. A human being needs to know the
dignity. But instead of saying control, we can say discipline. We need to discipline ourselves.
That's why you find whenever they go where there is a cheat woman. You know a cheat woman?
Yes.
Where you don't pay for what you are going to do. They go there in ambulance. The person who doesn't understand what they're going to be there, because a woman here is very expensive. Mm. You can pay 17 keto coming from your father's house.
Mm.
Then they ask you to. Then it's better to go for two. Mm. And the uncle is going to pray for, he's going to pay for seven to pack and eat meat.
Mm.
Knowing that those people, even if I give birth to everyone, I'm not going to live forever with my children. It's their part of being on earth, so long I leave my man. Now, what about culture?
Mm.
You leave your children, whom you don't know whether your blood was supposed to be as the society of tomorrow. You say society of tomorrow is today. Mm. I do what I want, and then they will do what they want because I got somebody who is strange to me.
Mm.
Are we building the future of the past, or we are building the future of we don't know?
At this point, don't
there
you
are
know?
A lot of things I asked you, Mitria.
There are many.
Can Mr. Walenga,
mm-hmm.
one day mm-hmm. invite me
mm-hmm.
to explain things, certain things, while you people you are there, addressed by a person. Snengela is my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
The one who is there who doesn't see.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin. But we grown up in Ovamboland.
Mm.
We went there. It's not that we were born there.
Mm.
We went there, and then we stayed there
mm.
and studied the people there and learned to be with them there
mm.
until me, I came until I was 6 years old, maybe.
How long have you been
but
separated?
I'm still physical fit, 100%.
How long have you been separated?
With my wife.
Mm.
Since 2011.
Why are you not divorced?
Those are the things which I tell you that even in the gender ministry, it found me married. The gender ministry was born in 2007.
Mm.
Me, I was married and I got married. I got married before gender ministry.
Why are you not divorced?
It's just because the problem is your government. The government
it's not the government. It's been over 14 years. It should
yes,
be 14 years, 13
the
years.
The government is saying,
mm.
you are married on paper,
mm.
but you have to pay. After marriage, you have to pay to divorce.
Now
you cannot insult the minister.
No, but that's not the
not
case.
The laws are not going for review. They stay there. After writing a law, which came from America and the agreement of the people who are not ruling you.
When last did you go to court to find out if you can get divorced? Because laws have
that's
changed.
Why I'm telling you, they
you can get
me I
out.
Have to apply.
No, but you can get out. I'm telling you now, you can get out. Do you know what the problem is with you people, with men, ne?
Yeah.
The problem that we are having here is that you don't think that tomorrow is going to come. You have been married to this woman for the past 14 years and you guys are not together. Do you know what happens when you die? When you die, she is legally entitled to all your things. And this
things
is somebody that you haven't seen for over
those
a decade.
Those are the things. For 14 years, me as a normal person of the government of whatever I brought from war, I know the people whom I entrust in law. They understand what was the world and what is the world. They don't change laws. They, the people who are going, they are noisemakers. You understand? Since we left the government, I was there, me, in Windhoek 2005, when our president, the first one, left, and I said, I'm not going to favor anybody. I went. We left. Some people, they were climbing those trees. If you know that woman who climbed in government garden, to climb that tree and say, Semamulozi, what? And the other one, they walk with food from there, like that, from Windhoek up to Utapi.
Mm.
And make schools in Oshana, Anamulenge.
Mm.
Saying that we got freedom university.
Mm.
We were in that house. The problem is people, they will never be the same. And the understanding of fighting, it is not going to be the same. Mm-hmm. Whenever you grow in love, suffering, it is not the word today.
You need to
even
get divorced.
Today, I met a lecturer who is still there in Ondang, in Ongwediva. A lecturer before university. We are good to name things.
Mm.
If you know the guy who is called Mr. Englishman, you know, Vambaland, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
We went a lot and we did a lot. Mm. Even when I'm here, it was not about severing a house of a woman.
Mm.
It was severing the people you met, and the people have to know what to go on living, not on dying. Omukwa, that
Mr. Englishman, you need to get a divorce before you die.
I wanted to get a divorce and get another woman, but I don't mistrust.
You don't have to get another woman if you are not ready. You can just be eating. You can just be eating where you are eating. No, I know that you think it's important, but if you are not ready, you are not ready. You are just going to waste people's children. But what I'm telling you is that you need to finalize your divorce, because the minute that you die, this person, my dear, go to God.
Whenever you made by law.
If you were there in 2005, the laws have changed. Did you know that the laws have changed? Or you only read political things in the newspaper, but you don't read legal things. The laws have changed. You can go and nullify your marriage. You can go and nullify your... At the court. You just go to the court. Yes, it's not that I don't understand, but many of you guys, right? What you guys are doing is you guys are separating from women, right? And you are going to go and die. And then it's not the government, man. It can't be the government, Mr. English.
If you work in law,
uh-huh.
To know how to read papers and govern the papers. Papers are not governed by mouses. Papers are governed because they are written.
Okay.
Even the people who are judging thieves.
According to the little pieces of the law that I do know, that I have studied, I know for a fact that you can go and nullify your marriage. The problem is that you don't want. You can go, you can go and get a divorce.
I wanted even to call Eagle FM today. To give you that issue, but the timing of here, whenever the Eagle FM is there on air, it is not on air here. I wrote a letter. I was told by the minister, the secretary to the minister of today of gender. I questioned them because of that law of marrying people. You give marriage for free, and you don't give a divorce for free.
Yeah, but it has been, that has changed. That means that means it even changed.
I want my answer tomorrow.
Mr. Englishman, they changed that even before the new cabinet. They changed it in the era of Yvonne Dauseb. They already changed it. So it is not, it's no longer
I'm in prison, my friend. I'm in prison. Even now I paid the bill of $4,000. I paid the $4,000, but the one who is still with that law is my daughter. My daughter is there in High Court of Oshakati.
Mm-hmm.
Answering for the mother of saying, I should not be together with my wife. While themselves being insulted, the wife is just married left and right here. I don't know who is going to make me out from there. I stayed for 16 years now. I wanted to be free, please. I wanted to have a wife of my own style of whatever I want. But the law is chasing me.
The law is not chasing you. The law is not chasing you, Mr. English.
I'm no longer
you just don't have an interest in it. No.
Making me in order to see her whenever she wants. Because what is there is a woman can change different types of whatever stick you want to walk on. But whenever the stick which you have to control a person, is the one which you don't even understand whether they are 50 or they are 60. I don't understand when you say that way. If you say that way, this case, I reported it on writing. On writing,
You sent the case to the wrong ministry.
On the 8th, I sent it to question. But the question I have, there are too many. I wanted even to go to Vinduku to jump from the car here and appoint those men. Some of them is an advocate who slept with my wife. Unless when I told my that man that you are sick, you understand?
Yeah.
It's when he left the wife. That man is an advocate. He lied to me, says an advocate in South Africa, but he used to be here. The name, where he come from, the house, the mother, and what he end, that man, he even intoxicated my wife and the other policemen in gender, saying that, let's make the Romeo and Julia for that man, saying he's threatening to kill the wife. That I was arrested for that. Saying I wanted to kill my wife. But I never even said the word. I was like a chicken in water. The day when I saw my wife with that the wife, the first one, not the first one, the fifth one. The first one is dead even. For these 15 years, For the first 15 years, I made 6 children, and then for the 15 years which I spent, I never wanted untruthful, because I was arrested by forced marriage by that woman. I have to speak, but when I speak, the judge who is in court is younger than me. Do you understand me?
Yeah.
The person who is there in court now is smaller than me. The prosecutor is smaller than me. The magistrate is smaller than me. I can tell you even I know their father even before themselves, they were kids, small even before school. Now, I don't understand. That's why I'm telling you, I say, it was very good for Sema to become a president when he's 6 years old. Because it's the ending time. But now, for me, whenever a person is singing like, he's making things whenever he makes, I'm looking at that person, what type of obstacles have you went through? Because it's like you are challenging the things which you don't even care of. Even when I'm talking to you, even when you will meet me, I'm like a small boy, but you never see me gray hair, you never see me walking, limping. You never see me like I'm just a small donkey. No. I'm still a criminal the way we started fighting. But I still read it because I'm 56 years old now. I wanted to go to reach 60. But the way I move, I'm not even shaking. I'm not even in the way I speak to you now. It is not the way people are carrying themselves today. Because I grown up being running and falling. We were the first voters of this country. We were the first people, even there in Vinduku, we were the first people to fight for this money of liberating people, whatever, veteran, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't receive any veteran account myself. But in myself, the house where I was, to get educated, I educated myself in Katima Bay there. Given a room by Zebald Wazenga, the commissioner. When the president, Gingob, started appointing governors, I was the one complaining about these governors. Of not knowing, because governors, they were useless people who doesn't know, like the first Zebald Wazenga was doing. But now, when he appointed the useless one, because it took a long time for him to become a prime minister. He appointed the useless one. Like this region where I came from, where it was nice, he knows it now. Even when you check the book, you go to tourism there, check the Zambezi region, you can check what was Kapivi, Zambezi Lodge. The Zambezi Lodge itself, which was the front of the east.
Yeah.
It's a wild animals area since 28 years I went to Vambaland. You cannot know whether here there is human being who are living here. You can't. The people, whenever they come back from Vambaland, they want to run away mad. A white person was good than a black person's government, which we cried for.
Yeah.
Now, what are we doing then? Even corruption here, which is here, is to favor whatever you favor. You saw Mr. Sankwasa when he came. How can you exchange land with a car? Are you okay there?
No.
Are you listening?
I'm listening.
Yeah, how can you sell land with a car? Have you found that a person, if you wanted to be reported everything here, I came last year in February. But for this now, a year and a half, what I can tell you, the administration which is there, it is not even what was supposed to be part of the country. But it's where the people who are lying to that they are educated are coming from. Teachers lying in schools that they are educated, they are stealing, I think. But when you go to Vambaland, where education which was there, where they are teaching, is where the teachers are now, which are going not even to come here. Where there was no, how are you? Where there was, what were you? Mala o anumboya fafana ngegewe wakala hapo. O inima ainingwa kwa faike wa undulirombwa mokanya kongandu. O inima apuki hila viti ya kibikulo ngeya puka cha zapo ndeka usiku cha onkati matinomo. Tinomo nungunua sikete inome ni inima keishi. Kutiwa okwendi fonu hako kukwatiro nukolu honye shashika weteko. Onungege na hala kwendi fwa koma kwao nande kwa lombwe wage kutia wangali kwendi fwa ye kuita vela kutia kwendi fwa nge shashua kwa tonjembo. Shweke siri huko. Tungo kanya kwa ino tungangano nufuwe shashua mwoshiku ya
Inotukana.
Endu ngedo no, doda kala. Nukucha ite tungaiko lungu, inotukana.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, I think that our caller was having a venting session, and I think that it's rightfully so. That's why I say that don't, I will listen. Don't feel like you are alone. You can come and talk to me, and I will listen. I will listen to your venting sessions, my dear. Alright?
So what did I come to talk about this afternoon? I thought that a good thing, a question that I get asked all the time is why I went into politics and how I did it. And I thought using that story, I could come out with a few key lessons that I learned and which I could share with you. So the reason why I went into politics was because I was angry. I was a very angry young person. I was angry about so much stuff. And two things that really, really got my goat were education and international development. And I'll explain to you why. With education, I mean, I was born here, but I grew up in Nigeria. I moved back when I was 16. And, you know, those of you who grew up in Nigeria probably know the four magic courses, medicine, law, accounting, engineering. If you didn't do that, then you're nobody, you're nothing. And, you know, everyone had very high expectations. And I came here and I told the teachers, I started at Nefi College, just a local state school for people who wanted to do vocational courses. And I told them that I wanted to be a doctor. Both my parents are doctors. And they said, medicine is really, really difficult. Have you considered nursing? And that was the culture of low expectations that I've learned, you know, being in the UK. Obviously, my parents didn't, you know, I had their advice and their support. I didn't do medicine in the end. I studied engineering. But one of the things that happened that I tell this story to so many people because so many people don't know what goes on in inner city schools in London. The only university I'd ever heard of was Oxford, so I knew I had to go there. This is the school I went to. And I went to the head teacher, along with them, a Chinese guy, and we both said, we want to go to this university, what do we do? And they said, well, there's no point in applying because they'll never take you. They don't take people like you. They're elitist institutions, and all they want are posh people, you know, people, children of their friends, and so on, that there's no point. There are many other schools that you can go to that'll be just as good. So I didn't apply because that's what the teachers told me. And then I took a year out, went to year in industry, and everybody there was going to Oxford or Cambridge. These people were no more intelligent than I was. They were not better. And yet, I was confused. And I got to university, and I met a lot of black people who had the same stories to tell. One of them said his teacher told him that there's no difference between Oxford and Oxford Brookes, so you can go to either one. And this is not to talk. I went to Suffolk University, by the way. This is not, you know, in any way to denigrate, you know, those institutions. You know, they're all good, but those of us who look to achieving the very best know that when you do get into the working world, as I am, I'm 30 now. Today, there are jobs that I apply for that they say only red brick universities, if you didn't go to Oxford, if you didn't go to Cambridge. And I never had the chance. And when I asked for that chance, I was told, don't bother. So education is something that really, you know, I'm really passionate about because I know in inner city schools today, there's so many people who have even worse teachers than that who tell them as long as you pass, as long as you get an E, you're fine. So I'm a school governor in Peckham and in Brixton as well, just because those are the areas where you find those sorts of attitudes, and that's something that I want to change. So I was very angry about that. Then the other thing I was very angry about, as many people have touched on today, was international development and the way that Africa is presented in the world. And if you remember around 2000, 2005, they had this Live Aid thing where, you know, all these musicians came and they had Madonna and, you know, some other people, I can't remember what they're called now. And then they had, the African bits in Devon where all the African musicians went. Nobody watched their bits. Nobody, you know, it wasn't part of the main show. And I was really angry that people like Bob Geldof, people like Bono were speaking on our behalf, telling other people what we needed. No one was actually listening to the Africans who had, some of them had really important, brilliant things to say, and no one wanted to hear what they had to say. They wanted to see the pop stars, people who'd never been in Africa. I mean, who would ever call, you know, I don't know who's a big musician now, who would ever call, you know, who sings in Nigeria today? Somebody give me a name. Dibange. Yeah, Dibange. Who would ever call Dibange to come and speak to Tony Blair and tell him exactly what he needs to do, you know, in the UK to make it a better country? They'd never do that. And yet, you know, the reverse happens. That patronizing attitude, you know, really annoyed me. So I thought, what am I going to do about this? You know, I'm angry. And I was like, I know what I can do. If I join, you know, get involved in politics, that's the way for me to change things. I think I could do a good job. So I joined the party that goes, you know, with my personal beliefs, and that was the Conservative Party. But before I joined, I asked for advice from a lawyer that I'd met. He had a scheme helping young ethnic minority people, you know, work in Magic Circle law firms. He worked in Clifford Chance, which is the biggest law firm. I said, ooh, Mark, I'm thinking about joining Conservative Party. And he was like, why do you want to join them? No, you don't want to do that. They're going to be hostile to you. They're racist. They're evil. You know, they're elitist. They're going to try and, you know, they...
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Pulling Hard Strings. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, madam?
I'm fine. You are Becky.
I'm Becky because
you are swearing. You must apologize to the nation.
I'm sorry for that one.
Okay.
Apology for the criminals is just to say sorry.
Yes, please say sorry.
I apologize for the whole nation, but I'm hurt.
I'm
hurt because the government which allowed the Minister of Gender or police to go and take wives to marry. It is killing the whole country today. Namibia was marrying countries. Namibia was responsible. But now...
But you didn't marry your wife because of responsibility.
...to move the woman from the houses of their own, or to move men away from their own house.
No, but that's not correct.
Yes. It gave people the problem. The people who are dead because of HIV, they are left without husbands. And then themselves, they are the ones who are arresting people. They are infecting people. I know the government started with us, and we are the people who are still ourselves making our own mistakes. The government is dead, my friends. You cannot control a sick person if he knows he is going to die. You know that?
Well, I'm learning now.
You know that you cannot control a dead person. His cold is a ghost.
Okay.
He can even kill his own kid.
But
you don't
hoping,
know that.
But we are hoping it doesn't get to that. It doesn't.
It cannot. The problem... I started this one with this one.
Could it have been your selection choice also? At which point do you take accountability?
You see, whenever you used to get angry, whenever you used to get angry about a man who can misuse you to go to his place.
Okay.
To stay there by the only lies he got. It's only you to find that is wherever you used to keep your own shoes, another bitch is having the shoes there.
Another?
Another bitch.
No, don't
is
swear.
Having all
yo,
his...
yo, 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 yo. Yo. I don't know. I think the gentleman is in his feelings. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Namibian nation and the nation and the world. I'm so sorry for the vulgar that is being used. And I will try and not accommodate him. But ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about expectations, right? We're talking about lowering our expectations, and maybe, just maybe, it will give us peace. Because if we are looking at the expectations that we have towards other people, we expect them to be faithful. Like our previous caller is complaining about infidelity with his wife, and they are now in separation, and it's been over 14 years, and this is a complaint that I see a lot, especially amongst senior men in this country. You guys go into separations with these women, but you never go through the divorce process. And prior to that, it was always that the divorce process in itself was expensive. But is it more expensive than leaving half of your estate to a person that you are no longer with? Is it more expensive than that? And also, the laws have changed. It's no longer a death sentence, you know, it's no longer something that's going to cost you an arm and a leg for you to get out of. It's no longer like that. If you're out there and you are in separation and it's been over a year and you are in separation with somebody, go to the court and find out the legal procedures on how you can get a divorce. Because I know that for one, my mother got divorced without even in the other person's absentia, because it was just not, there was nothing that they could do. But if you are in a situation like that, I urge you guys to go and find out more instead of bickering and complaining about it. Actually try and do something, because what happens with you guys is, especially our seniors, right? I think our younger people are doing what is right by getting divorced and leaving the marriage if the marriage is not working, you understand? But with seniors, right, they are in separation for over a decade and they are no longer together. People move on. They have other kids. They have lovers. They go on with their lives. And then it comes to the point where you are in the hospital, you are in ICU, and your next of kin is basically your ex-wife, and she has the power to pull the plug or keep you on life support, right? And this is a person that doesn't love you. So what are you expecting? You know, you are expecting for somebody to not do anything that is in the best interest of you. And by protecting yourself is by letting go of that attachment and letting go of that situation. We can complain about the government every single day. We can find new avenues to complain about the government. But the truth is that, I believe that in these couple of years, there must have been a little bit of money. There must have been a little bit of money that came from somewhere for you to even ask somebody to represent you. And also there is free counsel also, right? If you can't afford a lawyer, where do you think the people are getting? There's Legal Shield, Legal Aid, you know? And you can get a divorce. Now you are going to die one day and this person that you haven't been with for over a decade, right, is still legally your wife. Do you know what happens? She takes your house. She takes your cars. She takes your money. She gives only her biological children, and she doesn't give your children that you had prior to the marriage or within the marriage or within the marriage, the kids that you guys had after the separation. She doesn't give anything to them because she doesn't care for them. And you guys now leave your children, right, in turmoil because of decisions that you didn't make when you were alive. It's a very dangerous one. And I urge us all to see through it, okay?
All they want to do is hang around with people like them. And I thought, I've heard this before. Who said this? Someone said this. And I remember that teacher and I thought, yeah, this time I'm going to join and I'm going to see what happens. So I joined the party and, you know, I never had those negative experiences that, you know, the stereotype you hear about often. I never had any of those experiences. And I was at a party speaking to someone and they asked me why I joined. And I said, oh, I'm angry, you know, this is my story, how angry I was about international development. So, and they said, why don't you meet the party chairman? He's standing over there. This was at a Christmas party. And at the time it was Francis Maude. And I spoke to him. I told him what I wanted to do. And he said, well, there's globalization and global poverty policy group that David Cameron has set up. Why don't you join it? You know, I'm sure that they'd really like to have an African person on there, someone, because a lot of the issues cover sub-Saharan Africa as well as Asia. So I had an interview with Peter Lilly, the MP running it, and he said, yes, come on board. And I became a project leader for that. And I met a lot of people, you know, from the development area, even people like Josephine who are here today. You know, it was just, you know, it was really mind-blowing. And I, you know, got to influence the policy that Conservative Party is actually putting into practice today. And that was just by joining and simply saying, I want to help, I want to have a voice. And looking back on it now, you know, I was the only black person there, let alone African, on that policy group. And yet everybody was making decisions about what they're going to do to Africa, how they're going to spend the money, what's going to, you know. And if I wasn't there, none of that would happen. And so I sat there, being a project leader basically meant I got to review, you know, policy that people sent in, you should have this, or like, this is a bad idea, this is not, I mean, not everything is happening at the moment, but it's quite, you know, you feel like you've really achieved something when you can see the government talking about things that you helped supervise and put into place. However, just going back to this issue about negative voices, no matter what it is that you want to do, if you want to do something good, or, you know, if you want to do anything that's groundbreaking or radical, even if it is good or bad, there will be people who are out there to discourage you and to oppose you. So I'm going to tell you about a couple of people that I met on my way. Shortly after, when we produced the first draft of this report, Oxfam, the charity, held an event in Oxford Town Hall, and David Cameron was speaking about all the proposals that we had. And a woman stood up in the audience, and she started shouting, just a broom about twice this size, she stood up and said, who is David Cameron to talk about Africa? He's white, he's rich, he's a man, you know, talking about issues to do with women, that he's not someone, you know, who should be standing up and talking about these things. And I was sitting in the front row and I was like, hang on, you know, some of those things are things that I put, you know, together. David Cameron is the party leader. That doesn't mean that he's the one that thought of everything. It doesn't work like that. So I went around to speak to her just to let her know that, you know, you have nothing to worry about. She must have been about 50 or 60, somewhere between 50, 60. Very long hair, you know, sort of hippie-ish sandals. And, you know, I came over and, you know, she was smiling at me, looking really happy. And, you know, she was like, yeah, aren't you really angry about what these conservatives are doing? And I said, actually, you know, I'm one of the people who, you know, who helped to write this report. And I do actually believe what they're doing is good. And she took a step back. Her face changed. I've never seen a face change so quickly. And she said, you, Conservative Party, you don't know what you're doing. That these people, they're bad people, they're terrible people, they're just using you, you're immature, you know, look at you, you're not poor. I had sunglasses on, I was wearing jeans. You're wearing sunglasses, you've got jeans, you know, you're wealthy, you don't understand the world. And I was just like, you know, where is all this coming from? And I was like, no, look, like, you know, you can calm down. And she said, look, men like David Cameron have ruined my life. And I realized as soon as she said that, this is someone who has issues that have nothing to do with Africa. She is angry at David Cameron and maybe other wealthy white people and is using Africans as a proxy to fight that battle. And I've seen this happen many times. People are not really, there are a lot of people who are not necessarily interested in ethnic minority issues, black issues, Africa issues. They have an enemy who they see as the elite and the establishment. And we are a weapon that they can use. As soon as they come out, you're racist, you know, they shut them up and so on. And that's what this woman was. So of course I said all this to her and I said, you know, I actually thought that you were someone who was interested in Africa, but you're not. You're just a victim. And I walked away. As I was walking away, she put her hand back and then she slapped me. Yes, she slapped me. No one has ever slapped me like that in my life. Not even my mother. Yeah, and then she slapped me, and of course she started running. So I, being Nigerian, my instinct, immediately she did that, I chased after her. And, you know, by this time everyone was looking. She went, got to the top of the stairs, and I caught her by the hair, and I pulled her back. And then I just realized the whole room had gone silent. Because this was in the after the speech bit, people were drinking champagne, eating, the whole room had gone silent. Most people would not have seen the slab. What they would have seen was 26-year-old black girl holding this old white woman, you know, looking like she was about to beat her ear or something. And I just, you know, I was just like, oh my God, you know, I left them. So she ran out of them. She ran out of Oxford Town Hall. And yeah, I never saw her again. Thank goodness. But, yeah, there are people like that out there. And there are others who are not so violent, but also you listen to some of the things they say and you just wonder. And one time when I was campaigning, I mean, those of you who know the constituency, Dulwich and Western Ward, it takes in quite a lot of Brixton. It's by Peckham. It's just got one tiny bit Dulwich, so it sounds like a place where there are loads of wealthy people, but actually it's nothing like that. So it's a very safe Labour area. So you knock on doors and people laugh at you and they're like, yeah, you're never going to win, and you're like, yeah, well, you have to try. You have to start somewhere before you work your way up. And I knocked on this woman's door. And I told her, you know, what I was doing, that I'm your Conservative candidate. Have you decided how you're going to vote and so on? And she just looked at me like I was the craziest person. And she said, you really think that you could defeat Tessa Jowell? And I said, yes, I do. I wouldn't try if I didn't. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And she said, apparently she was a Labour Party member. I didn't know this. And she said, after everything that we've done for you people, that you think the best thing to do is to campaign against Labour. And to me, it was just, I just never heard anything like that before. And she looked at me as if not only was I contesting against, you know, a cabinet minister, but the fact that I dared to seemed to be, you know, like, how dare you dream so far. And it reminded me, I don't know if any of you have read this book by Richard Wright called Black Boy. And there's a scene in it where he's telling a lady he's sort of working as a houseboy for, and she's given him some molasses, really bad food, and she's asking him why he's writing or reading, and he told her that he wanted to be a writer, and she told him that he was wasting his time, and why would a black person like you want to do something like that? And that's exactly how I felt then. It was as if there's a box, and, you know, we will help you to achieve your goals, and, you know, it's not for you to participate, but to be led, you know, like sheep to where you want to go to. So, that was a very powerful, you know, experience for me. And it sort of reinforces certain things, which I always keep at the back of my mind. And here are some of the lessons that I wanted to share with you today. And the first one is to understand motives. on standing notice, because often there are people who think they're helping, but actually they're a hindrance, and they have good intentions, but actually their good intentions are not actually going to take us where we want to be. And you need to understand where people are coming from before you accept their advice as well. So I look at that head teacher. She wasn't racist when she was telling me not to apply to Oxford. In her own mind, all she sees are black people who fail. She didn't want us to apply too high above our level. And a lot of the teachers were like that. Apply for something small that you can achieve. Then there'll be more black graduates. Not excellence. You know, go as far as you possibly can. And you have to understand those motives when you listen to the advice they give you. The same with the friend of mine who worked at Clifford Chance, the lawyer, who said, don't join the Conservative Party. He had a lot of issues growing up as well. I found this out later. Had a lot of issues growing up with certain types of people. And for him to join a party where the stereotype is, you know, that wealthy white person, it was a big issue for him. And I never heard from him since as well. It also helps you reevaluate who your friends really are, because most people, most of my friends aren't, you know, conservative minded, but they were still, they came out to help and they were like, it's because of you, you know, we will do this for you, even though we don't necessarily understand. And that's how you know those people who are your friends, you know, those who, it's more about you rather than whether they disagree on certain issues, whether they're prepared to back you or not. And I really learned who my friends were during that campaign. So, and people may not be happy with those choices that you make. The other thing is not to make any assumptions. Support comes from unexpected places. I made the assumption that Oxford was a place that I wouldn't be happy. Maybe that's true, maybe not. But what I should have done in hindsight was to have gone there, seen for myself, spoken to people who were there. And this is something that I found in the party, where people were actually interested in hearing what I had to say, and they wanted my input into international development policy. If I'd listened to everybody else, I wouldn't have joined. I would have joined Labour or, you know, or something like that, or tried to influence them. Now they're out of government. If you pick only one party all the time, it means that whenever they're out of government, you have no say. We as Africans have political views across the spectrum, from left to right. There is no reason why we should all pile ourselves and put our eggs in one particular basket. Try, you know, every, maybe not BNP, fine. But like, you know, try other things and, you know, understand where people are coming from and stuff. Don't make yourself, don't make those assumptions. And the last thing is to speak with your own voice. And, you know, I'm glad that other speakers have touched on this, you know. For me to have been the only African person talking about policy that affects Africa is not a place that we should be. And many of these things are open. Yes, I'm not going to be prime minister tomorrow, but, you know, few people ever make that. There's so many other things that we can do. We should be speaking on our own behalf. Every time I see someone on TV talking on behalf of black people, or worse, those black people who have some very strange ideas about what should be taught in schools. I'm a school governor. There's some people who, they don't want children to do music, only African drumming, because that's what you do in Africa. It's not true. You know, people who have strange ideas like that. Make sure that you're speaking with your own voice. You know, don't just talk to, you know, the aid charities. You be the policymaker. Be the person who decides what's going to go on. Be the donor. Don't be the one begging the donors to do this or that. And we all have it in us. You know, I was 25 when I was doing this. 25, 26. Imagine what I could say now. I've learned so much more since then. So I hope that all of you will take those three lessons, understanding motives, making no assumptions, speaking with your own voice, and together I'm pretty sure that we can re-energize Africa and bring about, you know, that fresh ground, those breakthroughs that have been missing for the past sort of 50 years or so. Thank you very much.
I am here to help you do even more unzipping of your minds and of your hearts. Roxy Clay came out here and challenged your expectations. And I'm going to ask you to unzip and let your expectations fall out and push them aside altogether, because they're holding you back. Expectations are those lists of things we build up that tell us how things should be. They keep us feeling safe. And they also often prevent us from being fully present in our lives and from living to our highest potential. So I'm going to tell you about my journey away from expectation, which also turned out to be a journey towards self-empowerment and hope, and then how it might apply to your relationships as well. I first learned about the power of letting go of expectation on my journey back to my natural family, my birth family. I'm adopted, and my adoption is a fairly standard post-World War II story in Great Britain. My natural parents lived next door to each other in a small town near the east coast of Scotland, and when they finished high school, they went to the west of Scotland, to Glasgow, a whopping 38 miles away. My father went to Glasgow University, my mother went to nursing school. And when she became pregnant, they decided they were going to get married. But they were going to wait and tell their families when they went home on Christmas break. So they expected to end that year by becoming a family. That was December 1966. What they got instead was a tearful breakup outside my father's garage. For my mother, that was followed by a stay at a mothering home, a daughter who left the hospital before she did, a bill for my foster care, and ultimately, my adoption. My father paid penance by working as a bricklayer for a year before he returned to university in Edinburgh. They never saw each other again. Whatever expectations they had were shattered. On top of that, they were told that they should be grateful, privileged that they had a chance to redeem themselves and move on. This is all pretty standard stuff for that time and place. And I'm telling you this because I want to note that although my parents learned not to expect in the wake of our separation, this is not the productive kind of letting go. The kind of letting go that they learned is rooted in shame and in punishment. There isn't any hope in it. It's about shutting down. And what I would like us to do today is learn how to let go and open up. So fast forward 18 years from that tearful breakup in the garage. My adoptive father, my dad, had made it clear that he would totally understand if I wanted to go and find my natural family. And this is a lot easier in Scotland than it is here. They don't alter birth certificates. The adoptee has the rights to all the records. I took myself off to the House of Records in Edinburgh. I got hold of my birth certificate. It had my birth name, my mother's name, her then address. It took me another 18 years to decide to search. The lead up to that would take another TED talk or two. Mostly, something had shifted inside me. On a trip back in 2003, I walked past the house listed on the birth certificate, and I just couldn't let it go after that. I was led entirely by my gut. I kind of had to be. Adoptees are less than 5% of the population. Only a few of us search, and only a fraction of the people who search actually wind up being in reunion. There aren't enough of us for there to be a guidebook. And for me, this turned out to be a good thing. It did help that I had had my own child, my first child, in somewhat similar circumstances to my own birth. It also helped that I knew two other friends who were adoptees who were in reunion. They had gone into the reunion with a litany of expectations. One friend was in a her natural father that could best be termed as clandestine. The other friend's father drank himself into ICU the first time they met. Their relationships with all their natural families were fraught, to say the least. So I went in with an awareness of the risks. I looked clearly at the risks, and I decided to go ahead. I went in also trying to pare back to what I really hoped without the expectation. And what I hoped was to find my natural mother. I wanted to know where I came from. Yes, part of me did want the Oprah-style reunion. You know, the one where you go and the whole gigantic, attractive, successful, natural family welcomes the adoptee on whom they've been waiting their whole lives. But I did not go expecting it. I pared back and back to what was driving the hope. I knew I had to hang on to that. I knew I had to be whole. And I had to expect nothing. When I felt ready to do that, I contacted Birthlink in Scotland. This is a nonprofit agency that helps adoptees and their families connect with each other. I put my name on the list for a searcher. That takes some months. So in the waiting time, I searched more deeply within myself. I asked myself all kinds of odd questions. What would I do if I found my mother and she was dying and needed my help? What would I make of it if I found her and she was alcoholic, obese, if she was destitute, a retired prostitute? And I realized that anything that would bother me deeply would do so because I already saw it as a weakness in myself. In other words, anything I might want her to change was really something I wanted to change in myself. I believe this is also called owning your own stuff. I also talked to my brother. He's also adopted. And he said, look, Heather, the only thing you really have to worry about is if you go to meet her and she comes to the door with her bags packed and goes, all right, darling, where are we going? Because she thinks she's moving in with you. Anything else, you can just run away from. Stuart is often good for a little bit of comedy with some truth embedded. And he was right. Either one of us could end the relationship at any moment. And isn't that the case with all our relationships? We behave as though, in our relationships, especially our significant ones, we behave as though we're operating with some kind of a relationship union, like a pipe fitter's union that's going to uphold our expectation contract. But the truth is, relationships live in a right-to-work state. Any party, and sometimes a third party, like sudden death, can end the contract with no notice and no cause. And that is a scary truth to face. But as with any other truth, all the expectation in the world can't stop it. What I knew, what my natural parents and I had lived for nearly four decades before we came face to face, is that expectation doesn't guarantee you a thing. So I entered the relationship knowing the risks. I entered the relationship owning what I brought. I entered the relationship without that guidebook. And here's the good thing about there not being a guidebook. There aren't any articles about what a good reunion looks like. Like the articles you read that imply that all the other married couples have more sex than you. The skinny woman next door eats cherry pie for breakfast. The other guy's business makes more money than yours, and it's more fun to work there. All the things that build up our expectations, and they wreck our chances of honoring what's right in front of us. So when I entered the relationship in this way, what I found that I was able to really rest in and notice small moments and to take joy there. I noticed, for instance, the grain of my mother's freckled hand wrapped around her mug of tea the first time we met. I got to experience her with the sureness of adulthood and the heart of a child. I didn't have my expectation checklist running through my head. That's what expectations do. They tend to run through our head, act like a third party in our relationship, constantly vying for our attention. And that feels okay when things match up. But even then, we've stepped away from the moment and the relationship to check in with them. And when things don't measure up, then we really go aside. We start talking to expectation, asking it for affirmation. He should have brought me flowers, shouldn't he? She should run those meetings on time. And our expectation list says, oh, yes, honey, you are right. Get back in there and make them do it your way. So you keep asking and asking and getting grumpier and grumpier when things don't measure up. If you've asked a couple of times and you haven't gotten the response you wanted, you're probably not going to get it. And in that stepping away to measure up with expectation, you've missed the moment and the relationship as it unfolded. That might have offered a path forward. And even when the worst thing happens, when your expectations aren't met, and another path forward isn't on offer, you're then resting in the truth. And you can choose to move yourself forward from the truth of that relationship in that moment. Expectation does not stop painful stuff from happening. It just blames it on somebody else. What expectations do is pull us out of the moment. They hold us in an infinite loop of false possibility. So I challenge you today to free yourself from this loop of false possibility. Before you leave this building this afternoon, think of one relationship that has one unfulfilled expectation in it. Let the expectation go. Search yourself. Own your stuff. Commit to entering your next interaction in that relationship without the expectation, hanging on to some hope, and then just allowing yourself to fully rest in the reality of the moment. Whatever needs or wants you might have, it's possible that those can be met in some other way, but not by this person at this moment. Settle your heart to that, and then move yourself forward. I think you'll find that if you can be brave enough to rest in reality, human and flawed and possibly beautiful reality, it will take you places better than you've ever dared to expect. Thank you.
I'm a couples therapist and an absolute romance fiend. I'm talking about everything from The Notebook to Twilight to a show some of you may remember called The Flavor of Love. It's a reality competition show where the prize was the love of Flava Flav. I think about relationships a lot, and something that comes up a lot in my work is this belief that relationships are hard. And we believe that due to one primary reason. Our metric of success is based on what we've seen everyone else do. Imagine how you would honestly feel if you heard the following about another couple. Okay, I said honestly, okay? I heard they don't even sleep in the same bed anymore. They claim they never want to get married. I don't think they ever plan to live together. Would you think to yourself, it sounds like they have some serious issues? If we're honest, a lot of us would. And it's not because we're not open-minded, but we've been taught that these are warning signs for a relationship in trouble. And while they can be for a lot of people, that is not always the case. Relationship experts have found that one of the primary obstacles that couples face are their own expectations. When we compare ourselves to societal norms, we can develop a sense of resentment toward our partner, as well as a sense of shame for how we ourselves are coming up short. Now, before we really get into this, I have to say that some of us have to reckon with the fact that we may be with the wrong person. And that will be clear if your deepest desire is that your partner change fundamental aspects of who they are. You really want them to be a different person. But if you're confident that you're with the right person and you just still feel frustrated and dissatisfied, we may find that rejecting everything we've known about good relationships is the key to actually having one. I work with couples every day and I help them through relational crises. I remember I was working with an engaged couple for about a year. And when they first came to me, they said, we're 95% good. We just want to address the 5%. And I hear something to this effect often when I first meet a couple. It turns out that 5% was more like 75% and increasing. They were struggling to make a blended family work. One partner had kids. The other one had never lived with kids before. And they moved in together after only knowing each other for 3 months. One time I went on vacation, and by the time I got back, they'd called off their wedding. But why? Their love was honestly, it was evident, and they were not cruel to each other. Their issue was figuring out how to continue building their romantic relationship while also figuring out how to raise teenagers who, to be honest, already had two very involved parents. They weren't really in need of a third. After a particularly big blow-up over chores and responsibilities, I finally asked a dangerous question. I said, do you think that living together has hurt or helped your relationship more? We took a few weeks to explore that question, and they decided to test it out. They got a short-term lease on an apartment nearby for the partner who didn't have kids. And we were really strategic. We made a contract. Let's talk about dates. Let's talk about expectations while you guys are living separately. And by the time they came back to me, I'd never seen them communicate so well. They said that they were looking forward to every weekend that they got to spend together. It felt like a vacation because they would spend the entire week planning their time together and savoring every moment they had together. They also found that their individual relationships with the kids drastically improved without the pressure of trying to transition them into an entirely new household dynamic, especially when they only had a couple years left in the house. So at this point, some of you may be asking yourselves, what kind of couples therapist recommends that couples live apart? That's a fair question. And to be honest, for a majority of my clients, this solution would not work. And that is the point. When we're thinking about our relationships, we have to avoid focusing on what is normal. There's no such thing as normal when we're talking about two unique individuals, their own backgrounds, and their own values. For this particular couple, they had to figure out a way to separate their romantic relationship from what really boiled down to roommate issues. And they had a circumstance that supported the option to live apart. One conflict that comes up a lot in my work is the difference in values between arriving on time and arriving looking and feeling your best. Neither one is wrong, but I had a great model for this with my parents. When I was growing up, we drove absolutely everywhere separately. Everywhere. You know, if you want to be a little bit late, you arrive with my mom, and if you're arriving on time, you go with my dad. They had two minivans for only two kids, okay? We didn't go anywhere together. And one time when I was about 12 years old, one of my closest friends finally worked up the courage to ask me about it. And I could tell she was so nervous, like I was about to reveal to her that my parents were secretly separated and she just figured it out. You know, now that I think about it, I bet her mom put her up to this. What's interesting is that her parents did go on to get divorced, and my parents stayed together for 23 years before my mom passed away. Now, do I think that's due to them commuting separately? Of course not. But I think it shows us two things. First, it shows us that any deviation from the norm can be met with curiosity and even judgment. It also shows us that sometimes when we decide to do things a little differently, we can avoid the difference between having a really challenging day as a couple or a smooth day by simply accepting our differences, not as a couple, but as individuals. Instead of trying to change our partners, what if we instead embraced their differences, our difference in values, and release the pressure of doing what everyone else is doing? It's okay to be a stay-at-home dad. It's okay if you prefer to travel without each other. It's okay if you need to have your own bedrooms so you can maintain personal space and be sane for each other. It's okay if you want to break tradition and create a new last name. It's okay if you want to share your love on social media, but it's also okay if you want to protect it from public opinion. It's okay if you're in a season of life where you both just cannot prioritize sex. It's okay if people are confused about your relationship. It was never theirs to understand in the first place. If we continue to accept the narrative that relationships are hard, then we'll continue to do nothing about it. If our relationships feel hard, I encourage us to reflect on what is hard about it. Is it really the relationship, or is it external factors like our own personal trauma histories or work stress? If it really is your relationship, let's really think about what you and your partner are willing to do differently to enjoy it again. I want us to reject everything we've ever known about relationships and challenge ourselves to create a relationship that not only defies expectations, but honors the peculiarities that make us, us. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Ladies and gentlemen, we have officially come to the end of our conversation, and I hope to see you tomorrow at 1 p.m.